Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on scotlandisfree.ning.com and sovereigninternetradio.com. I mean, last time I was on MSI, I was calling it TNS, so this is going to be a real scream, I can tell you. Well, I've got a really great guest lined up tonight, Rob Freeman, who I'm thoroughly looking forward to talking to. I've got a couple of favours to ask, though, because I've got some notes that I'm going to be using when I'm talking to Rob, and I'm going to be listening to him carefully so that any questions that come to mind I can make a note of. I am in both chat boxes, but I shall be able to keep half an eye on the Scotland is Free one because I'm more familiar with that, having had more chance to use it. So if there's questions that come up in the Sovereign Internet Radio chat room, if somebody can do me the favour of private messaging them in the Scotland is Free one, it'll probably make it a little bit easier for me to keep track of what's going on. Another thing is that I'm hoping we're going to be able to basically build on the information and seek a bit more information on the subject matter that Rob covered in the three excellent shows that Sean did with him when we were still TNS Radio. So that was some time ago now. I don't know how many months, long time. And I haven't had time to go looking for the links for those podcasts. But again, if somebody can find them for me and post them into the chat room so that people know where they can find more info from this lovely man, then that'd be really great. But I know that Rob's on the line waiting for me, so hopefully he can hear me. Are you still with me, Rob?
Yeah, hi, Doc. Yeah, I'm here, mate. You all right?
Absolutely great. Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us here on this brand new radio station. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a real pleasure just to come on. Thanks for inviting me. I don't even know which station I'm on, Doc, to be honest.
I'm not sure I do either. I think it's called sovereigninternetradio.com. It was MSI until only a couple of days ago when mysteriously we had the plug pulled on us again. I don't think anybody really knows in any detail what was going on. I'm sure more will come out as time goes by, but we are not running around like a headless chicken. We are most definitely a phoenix rising from the ashes, and it's a real pleasure having you as the first guest on the first show. So,
oh, blimey, thanks. Yeah, thanks.
I think it was really brilliant because we've been talking about it for a while. I think that synchronicity has just made sure that, you know, we've hopefully got some great material to run by people this evening. You're a regular host on Critical Mass Radio, and I've been for a while. I've listened to loads of your material on there, and I was really used to listening to you on your Out of the Matrix show, and I can't help noticing that for the last half dozen shows, you've been calling it Into the Light, which is really inspiring. Why did you change the name of your show, Rob?
Yeah, it's a good question, Doc, that, to be honest. Well, I think I did 35 broadcasts as Out of the Matrix. And what I've noticed over this last year, 18 months, that not just from our radio stations that we're broadcasting on, but from all sorts of information, people were becoming more aware and more awake at an unbelievable rate. And so after the 30-odd broadcasts as Out of the Matrix I did, I wanted to take a bit of time off to get some research done, which is what I really like doing. I think I only ended up packing in for 6 weeks, and I was asked to come back. But what I realised that 6 week gap gave me was I couldn't believe how much information and knowledge people had absorbed, and then were putting it into practice. So in my own mind, out of the matrix seemed to hold a bit of a negative connotation, like we have to get out of something. And into the light is where I saw that we were all going. Not only were we at a point of defence and trying to get out of this matrix, we gathered that much information at conference that we actually are marching forward now and taking it to them lot, the other side, whoever they are, and actually getting results. So almost like a spiritual type of thing, I decided to call it Into the Light because that's where we're headed now, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah, it makes loads of sense to me. It's funny that because I think there's a pretty intimate connection, actually, between the discovery of the rabbit hole, as it were, or the looking glass, whatever we want to call it, because I noticed I've been involved with Truth Juice since they started, and they were covering lots of different subjects, but including the lawful and legal stuff. And one of the things I noticed was that there's a tendency when people do start seeing through the illusion, do start finding out that we're actually being farmed rather than looked after, there is a tendency for them to jump more or less immediately onto a more spiritual path. It's like their mind is opening generally rather than just to the illusion.
Yeah, to be honest, Doc, and this is only my opinion, I think that all us lot who are awake, I think it was a gradual spiritual process first, and then when we were ready in some sort of spiritual way to take things on board, I think it's then we came across the law and commerce stuff, rather than everyone thinks it may be the other way around. But to witness the fraud and the corruption that's taking place, I think we were gradually spiritually awakened without actually knowing. So I think that is the first process. Then you learn, I can only speak for myself, then you learn the techniques and the things that they're doing. But I think you have to be spiritually prepared for it. You don't know you are, but I think it's an initial spiritual awakening slightly. Then you find out what they're doing, and then that spiritual stuff carries on.
I think that's a very interesting point, you know, because one of the things that's kind of intrigued me about the whole process from my own, you know, my own personal point of view is that, I mean, the deeper down the hole you go and the more of the stuff you find out, some of it is genuinely horrendous, you know, but eventually you do get to look at it. And I've been somewhat puzzled by the fact that, you know, I've stayed pretty chirpy really for the whole process, and I'm struck by how cheerful people are around me, and that's what you've just said would really make some sense of that.
Yeah, and have you noticed, Doc, there's some people, some of my family members, and they just cannot see it, or they will not, or they just cannot. It's so obvious to us now that they cannot see it, can they?
I mean,
we know loads. Sorry, mate, go on.
Yeah, that's another very, very good point, is that there is, there definitely seems to be a line, almost as sharp as a line between, you know, where your shadow's being cast and where the light's on the pavement. There's some people who are ready for it, and there's a load of people who aren't, and there doesn't seem to be any in-between.
And that's the point, that's what I'm saying. The reason they can't see it is because they're not ready. And I suppose, you know, being ready for it means you must have some sort of spiritual gradual awakening first. So I think it fits in, I think it's right.
Yeah, and I know that one of the things that really struck me about your Into the Light shows, because I've listened to them all now, was the fantastic stuff you said about the law of intent, because that seems to me to be really at the root of it. Do you want to give us some idea of how important you feel that is and how you bring it into your everyday life?
Yeah, I think, I think intent or intentions, I think that is everything as far as I'm concerned. It's the back of everything. It's the back of the ones that feel the need to control us, their intentions. And it's all about our intentions. And it might seem a bit airy-fairy, but I seem to be doing quite well against this system and these oppressors. And what it is it's my intentions. If you can... If you've got honourable intentions, that's the number one key word. It's who's in honour and who's in dishonour. And if you have honourable intentions, then doorways seem to open up, things manifest. I think we were talking about this privately not long ago, Doc. Things come as you need it and when you need it, as required. And it's all about that intentions, the intentions that you put out there. It's kind of like that law of attraction thing. If you've got good intentions and you're acting on it, it will, honestly, I tell all our listeners out there now, it will always work out for you 100% of the time. The other side, they've got bad intentions, and their intent was oppressing us for a long time, but that's because we didn't recognise who and what we were. So the intent, the absolute intent is everything. It's cause, consequence and effect. Whatever you put out there will come back eventually. So you do things, stand in honour, stand in light and truth, and send those intentions out, and it will come back 100%, 100 times, and you'll benefit each time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, that can come about almost accidentally, can't it? Because once you realise that the actual law, breaking the law, involves causing harm, loss and damage, and it is our intent, and, in fact, our actions are causing no harm, loss and damage. And I think that learning this stuff makes us even sharper on that kind of intent, if you like. So the very core of what we're doing states our intent, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And it can cause harm and loss for somebody else, but if your intention wasn't to do that, and only you yourself know, if that wasn't your intention to do it, then you can make recompense and make up for it. So it's all about intent. If you cause no harm to another living soul, and that includes animals and trees, not just human beings, don't cause harm to another living soul. That if that's your intention, then like I said, it will always work out for you. And if you do cause harm or loss, and it wasn't your intent, then you have an obligation to make up for it then.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that there's definitely a difference between intending to do it and doing it accidentally, isn't there? And even the law, in fairness, seems to recognise that in many cases.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
But the other side of the coin, of course, is quite clear that the, I don't know what to call them really, the dark T-shirts, the people who are wearing the black hat, whatever we want to call them, they are... They're causing harm, loss and damage on a massive scale on a daily basis, and they don't seem to be having a very good time of it.
Well, up to probably last year, they were doing all right, but I really do think that there is a mass awakening. People, I know, just everyday people on the street who just know it's wrong now. They're looking, people are starting to look. And they are backpedaling. I know a lot of people think that we have not got much of a chance or whatever, but... Mark my words, I'll come back in a year's time. 2014 is going to be a massive difference, Doc. They are backpedalling right now.
Yeah, indeed. And I get the distinct feeling that because their behaviour seems to be almost habitual, it's definitely systematic, that the kind of individual approaches that we've got are not only forcing them onto the back foot, but they're making kind of attempts to... accommodate our behaviour, to try and deal with it and stuff. And, you know, they've got to be, it's meaning they've got to be lively on their feet. And it seems to me that what's happening is quite a lot of the time that works to our advantage rather than the other way around. I mean, I know it looks sometimes like it's not working that way. But, I mean, how often do we get bits of paper delivered to us in a bundle of paper which were intended for somebody else and not for us? You know, or an email sent to us that really wasn't meant to come and things like that. So in a way, you can see it kind of degrading from the other side as well, can't you?
Yeah, you can. And what we've got to realise is this whoever they are super powerful. They've got super intellect. But what a lot of people do forget is they are a very small band, relatively speaking, to the world's population. Excuse me. So the trick is for them... is for the ones working for them, the uniforms and dark suits, and you know the public and civil servants, the ones working directly underneath them. The real battle for this small band that want to stay in control is to keep those on their own foot soldiers hoodwinked. That's the real secret. If they can keep police officers, military, bailiffs, security industry, if they can keep those people still hoodwinked, then they're not too bothered about the masses, because we're under, basically it's like martial law, under control. What we need is these people, and it is happening. These people need to start breaking ranks and questioning now. I know two police officers, Doc, that have now packed up, and they were promised £75,000-£80,000 when they start for the pension, and they're barely getting 15 or 20 now. Now they're starting to question, hang on, I was promised X amount of money, where's my pension? And they're still in touch with colleagues, and there's a ripple going through the police and the military. The military are starting to realise that they are fighting for a corporation, not for the country. So these are the type of people, Doc, that once they can no longer be hoodwinked, that is their secure blanket, the evil ones. It's gone. It's gone then, because they are relatively small.
Yeah, no point in having a command and control structure if you've got nothing left to command and control.
Exactly, mate, yeah.
I think that's something else that is easily forgotten as well, is that, you know, it takes a lot of concentration to do what we're doing. It takes a lot of determination. And we're playing for a result, which is basically, at the very least, to be left alone. I think that one of the things it's easy to forget is that everything we do in the public arena, in the interests of our intent, as it were, of causing no harm, loss and damage, in, say, a court, you're surrounded by ushers and the clerk of court and the magistrates and a whole load of people who are seeing what you're doing, and every single thing you do makes a difference to them, doesn't it?
It does, and you are putting your energy into that. I know people think it's a bit airy-fairy, but I promise you it's not. You put your energy into that place, and it resonates and stays there, and somebody coming in after you will pick up the energy that you've left there. And so, yeah, like you say, I think second time I ever went to court, though, there was, was it the second time? Oh, yeah, second time I ever went to court, I tried to arrest some magistrates, and I ended up going back 2 weeks later because I thought it were all done, but they adjourned it. And so the third time I went, there was loads of sort of young people, 18 to 25, in the courts next door. And I ended up, they all ended up, look at this nutter, and they all came into the public gallery. And as I was doing what I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was having a go, I turned around, there were about 40, 50 people in public gallery, just ordinary people, absolutely loving that this lump from Sheffield was trying to arrest a district judge at that time. And they were kind of laughing, thinking, wow, how can somebody do that? So, yeah, once somebody's seen it or felt it, it obviously opens doors for them.
Yeah, it's interesting, the arresting judge or magistrate thing, isn't it? It's quite difficult to do it because you've actually got to lay hands on them to arrest them, haven't you? You've got to touch the shoulder or something, and they're very difficult to reach. I know you tried that a couple of times, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Well, I'm trying to chase Usain Bolt. I had no chance. They got a head start on me anyway. Yeah, at first it were three magistrates, and they scuttled off and didn't dare come out. And what they did is I abandoned ship. I didn't know very much back then, a few years ago, but I abandoned ship. And then just as we were leaving, it wasn't even me, mate, that's it. You were in public gallery, just me. And as we were leaving, somebody said, oh, it's been rescheduled. It's adjourned till 2 weeks' time. So then I went back 2 weeks later and they'd upped the ante with a district judge in all his regalia and his black gown. And I just put him on notice, put him on his oath. I said to him, I'm going to ask you three. Three's the magic number, Doc, as you probably know. I asked him first time if he's operating on his oath. I asked him second time, and I said, if you don't answer me now on the third time, I'm just going to come and arrest you. And he ran off as well. So, yeah, I couldn't catch him. It was a big courtroom. They put me in a really big courtroom as well. So, yeah, he got a head start on me. Well, never mind.
That's interesting, isn't it? So when you offer to try to arrest them, they don't try and come back out and have another go once you've gone then?
No, absolutely not. That door was shut and they were gone. Security came second time, but they didn't come near me, really. They stood about 3 foot either side of me, but promised not to touch me. So, yeah, and I got that case just disappeared then into the ether, yeah.
So, in a way, that's quite a successful technique in itself, at least as far as your history suggests.
Well, it is, but I didn't know much back then. I didn't even know you could arrest a judge. Or a magistrate. Who would know that? I don't know where that came from. But now, as I've progressed all these years, I know. In fact, I've just about two months ago, I've just helped somebody who had a court case come up in magistrate's court, and I filed a motion to dismiss the whole thing. And the court wouldn't back down when he kept ringing, so he went in on the day, and the whole thing was dismissed on the day. So now I can do it through using. Because I've become more adept now, though, I can actually do it using their paperwork and system against them now. I've found holes. There's loads of holes in their system. It's not a perfect system. And what I do is I throw it back at them, and now I can get rid of cases just using paperwork instead of having to go in the place now.
I know that's what Simon Spaniard advocates, isn't it? He says there shouldn't be any need, really, to come head-to-head with any of these people because it's all in the paperwork.
Yeah, and Simon's from that sort of background, so he's really knowledgeable, but... I've had to actually learn this myself through experience. Yeah, but he is right, yeah. You can do it on paper. Anything they can do on paper, we can do better on paper.
Yeah. I was interested, because I know the Birkenhead event, which was a real eye-opener for me. I'd never been to a protest of any sort, and I was intrigued by the fact that they wanted us to take black umbrellas, which is why I went along, truth be told. But I was interested by the fact that there they did actually manage to lay hands on the judge, largely because there were so many of them and there was such mayhem in the court. So Rusty did manage to lay hands on the judge, or was it Lockie managed to, God bless him, managed to lay hands on the judge, and he was arrested. He was, I think, protectively removed from the court by the police, but I gather that he never heard another case.
Oh, is that right? I know. I don't know whether he had another case. I don't know about that. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah,
yeah, I think he retired without ever returning to the bar, as it were.
Okay.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I mean, whether or not it'd be useful for judge arrestment to become something of a national sport is, of course, a bit of a moot point. But it does seem that actually, because what you're effectively doing there is you're bringing to the attention of people and certainly to the judge that you know that it's well, you're effectively turning it into a criminal matter, aren't you? And you're offering to hold the public servant to account. That's really what you're doing at base.
You are, and actually, Doc, what I didn't realise, the reason I didn't get results is I didn't realise what was happening at the time, but now I've learned more. The reason we can arrest them is they are judges, but they're not acting in the capacity of judge there. They are, it's an unlawful administrative hearing. It's a private, he's operating on a private oath, and it's a private meeting. It's not a public court. So he can't say that he's on, if you ask him if he's on his oath, he may say yes. He certainly won't say no, or he may not answer. But if he says yes, he's not lying, but he's not telling the truth either. When he says yes, he's working on a private guild oath that he has to the bar. He's not operating on his oath that is the judge capacity that he holds, his office he holds. The oath that he swears to the Queen and country and do right by all manner of people, that's the oath he's not acting on. So by not acting on that oath and acting on his private guild oath that we're not supposed to know about, he's not in the capacity of judge, you see. That's why you can arrest him, and that's what they know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah. And, are these guild oaths kind of in the public domain, as it were? Are they viewable anywhere?
Well, actually, I've got a document, and I did it on my show, and it's completely Roman. It's how the Romans operate, the private guild. It's absolutely Roman, I don't know if it's Roman civil law it's called, or canon law, I think it's civil law. It's Roman law down to a T, it's still operating now, 2,500 years later. In fact, I can send it, if I can dig it out, it's a really interesting reading, it's absolutely spot on, absolutely.
I'd like to see that, definitely, because I'm quite interested in the oaths, really, largely because when I was down in Glastonbury recently, friend of mine, her great-grandfather or something, was a freeman of the City of London, and she's got his oath, she's got the oath of those freemen framed. And I meant to take a note of it or a photograph, but I didn't get round to it. I will next time I'm down there, because basically it really shocked me, you know. Not something we've really got time to go into, but perhaps I'll make a quick note to have a look at it in a future show, perhaps.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to say about courts, I've got loads of information on courts, if you want to talk about it at a later date or now or tonight or whatever, but I can always send it to people if I can't get the information out tonight. If you want to move on, but I'll just tell you this about courts, and I've only recently found this, 4 or 5 months ago. All the courts, magistrates, county court, magistrates court, and even crown court, yeah, they're called lower courts, and they're called courts not of record. The high court and above are called courts of record. So you've got the lower courts are courts of not record, the higher courts, high court and above, are courts of record. Courts of not record, they don't keep a public record that's a public record. Get this, they don't have the power to fine you, imprison you, or imprison you for contempt. So that means Crown, magistrates and county courts do not have the power to lock you up for contempt or fine you. How interesting is that?
That's really interesting, isn't it? And have you got any way of bringing that to bear upon them?
Absolutely, and that's how I helped dismiss this chap's case as well. If you know the words to use and they know the system, there's absolutely nothing they can do. I don't know why people are getting locked up in magistrates' courts. It's absolutely impossible for them to lock you up. The only reason people are getting locked up is somewhere along the line they're consenting. They don't even have the power to lock you up. So or fine you, Doc. You cannot receive a fine from a magistrate's court if you know what you're doing.
So the only reason you are getting fined or locked up is because you are consenting?
Yeah, albeit by force or trickery, in some way you are consenting, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are methods of getting around that. Can we talk about that a bit?
Well, obviously, when I've... I had a court case last October in magistrate's courts where it was a driving thing. They were trying to get me 6 months prison. I didn't know back then what I know now. I've only just found out 4 or 5 months ago. But what I decided to play their game, and I ended up beating them on 4 charges anyway, and they took no action. But I don't know what I know now. All you have to say, you don't have to stand in the dock. Excuse me. It's the name game's hardest bit to get over. That's the biggest hurdle. They want to be calling me Mr. Freeman, Mr. Rob Freeman. That's what they want to be calling me, as we know. And I can tell them it's a corporate legal name, it's the name of a trust. I mention trust because it is a trust, without going into too much detail. So all I tell them is, now, if I did have to go to court, I'd just tell them, I don't recognise that title. Well, I do recognise it. I'm not surety for that title. I'm not actually surety for it. But I'll even let them call me that now. I'll tell them, and hopefully I don't have to go in court, I don't care what they call me now. I know this is what I mean about knowing who you are. I know who I am now. I'll tell them, I don't want you to call me that. I don't answer to it, but I'm here to assist the court. So I'll say to them, if you want to call me Mr. Freeman, then you go ahead and call it me. But in no way am I contracting any way, shape or form here today. Okay, and then I'll tell them, is this a court of public record? Every time I've asked that, which I didn't know the full implication before last year and so, but I knew you had to get it on the public record and not just on the record. You see, because it's a private matter, they if you say, is it on the record, they'll say, yeah, because they're allowed to have a private record, a bit like Tesco having a meeting. But I said, is this a court of public record? And that's the key word. And every time I've asked it three times in court, magistrates' courts, they've said, yes, it's a public building. I've said, no, that's not what I'm asking. I know it's a public building. I'm saying, is this a court of public record? And they look at each other. The clerk's the one that calls the shots. So what I did then, when I didn't really know what I was doing over a year ago, I said, well, I'm now convening a court of public record. And that's a totally different thing now. That means every word has to be put on the public record. So it makes them sort of sit straight up. Yeah,
and you don't miraculously give them the right to fine you and lock you up by turning it into a court of record, because it's still a lower court, isn't it?
Yeah, what happens is I tell them that they can call me what they want, but I am now sovereign. This is a court of not record, which is what I will tell them now. So therefore, it's a fight for jurisdiction. They've got no jurisdiction over me. I'm sovereign, so now it's my court. I tell them it's my. Even before, I used to go around taking drinks of water to my mates in public gallery. I took over the court, not in an arrogant, begetted way, because I'm not. If you ever meet me, I'm pretty shy and quiet, to be honest, until I get talking on stage or radio. But I was walking around the court and handing water to people that wanted it, and chatting to people and going over to their barrister and chatting, and then everyone were looking at me like I was some sort of freak. But what I wanted to show that is I'm confident because I know who I am, and that's. I know we were talking privately about the fear thing. When they see you've got no figure, where's that come from? What am I drinking? I'm on a drinking orange. What's happening there? When they see you've got no fear, I don't want to swear, but it shits them up. They think, oh my God, who's this? Why is he so? They think, is he a barrister? Is he an ex-judge? Why is he so confident? So that's what that's all about. So I'm letting them know that it's my court now, because I am the highest power in there. The judge is not acting on his judicial oath. He's operating, or the magistrate's on. On a private guild. Well, hang on a minute. You're using a public building, which you've just told me, for private gain. Now, you can't have it both ways. Which one are you? Can you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, yeah, I can. And of course, he's in public office, which makes him something less than your full man, doesn't it? Really. You know, if you're
by choice, that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on.
It reminds me of. I heard Mr. T say in the old days of TNS once, he said, you can call me what you like so long as you don't infringe my rights.
That's, well, brilliant. Like it. And they can't win, Doc, because if you're actually on your judicial oath, then you're a public servant, which means you work for me, so it's my court. If you're operating on your private guild, then you're using a public building, which I'm a member of the public. You can't operate privately for gain in a public building, so once again, it's my court. So once you know who you are, they've got no answer to it, mate.
Very nice. Very nice. That's a very nice distinction. I like that a lot. Let's stick with the courts, being as that's what we're on for the moment. There's a couple of things that I was interested by in your in the shows you did with Sean. It's just kind of a... seeking how you did things and how you do things now, really. When you first went into the court, I remember you telling a story about how one of the ushers asked you whether you had any proof that you were the authorised agent of, Mr. Rob Freeman or whatever. And you might want to tell just reprise the story of how you got around that. But... You also, as a second part to the question, like you also found out later on that that's not required, that you don't actually have to do that anyway. So perhaps you'd let us know how you'd get around it if they asked you the question now.
I'm laughing because you took me back then to what I'd actually did. Yeah, well, I've got some great information that I've only just found out, so our listeners are going to love this. Okay, you actually... Basically, what I did back then and what I now know is that any of us, right, if you're in court, Doc, and you want me to help you, I can speak for you in court and they cannot stop me. And I'm just going to explain, like I did on Sean's show, what I actually did. I didn't realise at the time, but as it's evolved and I've learnt more, I now know why it happened. Okay, so what happened was I wouldn't be Mr. Freeman. I just said I was an interested party. And straight away the usher woman said, well, where is Mr. Freeman going to come? I actually had the birth certificate in my pocket. I said he may show up at a later date. I don't know whether he's coming or not. But I'm an interested party. I'm his lay representative. And so she went to see the magistrates and came back. I think this was a gas thing or something to do with, I don't know, a gas bill or something anyway. And she says, well, the magistrate says you've got to have some sort of written authority to speak for him. And I said, I had a file type thing that zips up with papers in. I said, oh, I've got something somewhere. I says, I'm just going into the toilet. And what I did is I went into the toilet and I wrote myself some authority out and sat on the toilet for about 2 minutes, scribbled it out in pen, dated it, signed it as Mr. Freeman, the Trust Corporation, and then signed it as myself. Well, actually, at that time, my name was I Am Adopted Spirit of the Chirico Apache. That was my name then, that day, that particular day. I know, that's another blooming story, that. So then I came out and I said, what did you want, love? And she said, she was really smug. She said, the magistrates require authority or you cannot come in. And I went, and I just took it in my pocket, all folded up, and I think a blue nose on it and everything. I went, well, that do. And she looked at me as I went, oh, shit. And she took it back and she went, yeah. And so I just wrote it quickly, Doc, but what I've learned, you're going to love this. What I've learned now is, okay, get this. Am I rattling on too much, Doc?
No, carry on. No, it's brilliant, mate.
Okay, I didn't realise why it worked. I just knew that I'd sneakily written myself authority. But as I've learnt now, get this, somebody wanted me to speak for me in court. Actually, I got rid of the court case anyway, so I don't have to now. But they weren't confident enough to go in court, and I said, I'll speak for you. And they said, oh, no, you've got to have, I don't know if you know, it's called right of audience. You've got to be granted a right of audience from a judge if you're not a barrister.
It's a real common challenge, isn't it, that one? If you evade the name thing, then this is the next thing they generally seem to try and pull on you.
Absolutely, Doc. Yeah, right of audience. And if you want to speak for somebody else who's not as confident, again, they won't let you speak for them unless you're a trained barrister or in the legal profession. So if you want to get away from your legally given name and still speak, they won't let you. And if you want to speak for somebody else, they won't let you. So what I've realised is I've studied it, and we all know, let's say, for instance, my dad has, in fact, I wouldn't say has Alzheimer's, but I've got a brother who's got cerebral palsy, Doc, and I have to sign his cheques for him and stuff. He got awarded some money, and I look after him, but I'm his power of attorney. I have to sign his cheques and do his banking for him, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what I realise is, hang on a minute, what's that phrase, power of attorney? So I studied it. And what I found is, I'm his lasting power of attorney, so I do it as long as he lives and he wants me to. I do it for him. But get this, if you had to go to court for something, Doc, and you want me to speak for you, there's a thing called power of attorney in fact. Okay, you can write me out a sheet of paper to say, Rob Freeman, I authorise Rob Freeman to be my power of attorney in fact, and you can use it just for one particular matter, okay? And then what you do is you write two sheets of paper out, Doc. You write the power of attorney in fact. So you're giving me full authorization to act as your power of attorney. So I speak for you. And then the second sheet is, once the matter's over, if it's over that day, we have a second sheet where you revoke it or I resign from it. And we both sign both pieces of paper. And I can speak for anybody in any court, in any court case. And when you think from a deeper meaning, Doc, power of attorney. We give them, judges, magistrates, we're giving them the power of attorney, the power to be a judge. It comes from the people. That's why we can give other people power of attorney. So you are, in effect, empowering me to become an attorney for that day.
Brilliant. Lovely, isn't it? Lovely. So by consenting, you're effectively handing over your power of attorney to the court or whatever representative is claiming it.
Brilliant, because I was in a court case and I wouldn't plead, and I wanted to talk about this a little bit. In fact, I've got some stuff about what to do with cops and courts and the tricks they use. But one of the tricks is they ask you to plead. They say, how do you plead guilty or not guilty? And I said, well, I'm not going to plead. We know pleading is begging. And so this is about 2 years ago, this. And so the clerk to the justices who calls the shots in magistrates court, when I said, when you don't plead, Doc, they can't move forward. They cannot budge. They cannot move forward unless you plead guilty or not guilty. So I said, well, I won't plead. And they said, why not? And I said, well, you've not disclosed enough evidence for me to defend myself. Why the hell would I plead? So the clerk to the justices turned to the magistrates and says, put him a plea of not guilty. And I went, whoa, stop. And this is what I used 2 years ago when I didn't know as much. I pointed to her and I said, as a lady, I said, have you got power of attorney over me? And she looked at me as if to say, shit, how does he know that? And she looked away. And I said, because if you have, I don't remember signing it over, but if you have got power of attorney over me, brilliant, you are liable for everything that comes my way. So go ahead and send her to jail or fine her. If you've not got power of attorney over me, which I know you haven't, you cannot speak for me. And so that case fizzled away because I won't plead. Interestingly,
that's pretty powerful as well. Because I remember Truth Juice Dave telling a story of him being taken down the police station because they told him they weren't going to arrest him unless he didn't turn up at court. So he went down the police station and they did arrest him, and he was basically being difficult about giving his details. And a PC next to him said, "He's Truth Juice Dave," and the guy behind the desk said, "What's your birthday, Truth Juice Dave?" And Dave refused to do that. And the PC gave him his birthday as well. And Dave said nothing, but he eventually wrote to the court and wrote to the police station saying, I want that PC who assumed my power of attorney and is fully liable to be present in the court to do the business that he took on hand. And the case just went away, unsurprisingly.
Brilliant. Truth Juice Dave's one of my best friends, he's one of my best mates, he's very, very good, very good.
Yeah, he's very popular, we've had him on a few times, I really enjoy it. He sometimes loses me, I must admit, but he always turns out a good show. I know he's on Critical Mass recently, I haven't caught the pod recently.
He's starting a new show, Doc, he's having a new show on Critical Mass Radio next Thursday night, I think he's starting his new show. Yeah, very, very good day, Doc.
He's going to be on the same night as me, so I'm going to have to do that on the podcast as well then.
I know this is a problem we've got two stations running together, but there's no reason why we can't listen to each other's podcasts and join together, is there? It's all good stuff.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I love the pods. I think they're really useful. It's how I get to hear most of my radio, because, you know, it takes so much time to actually do a radio show, get the podcast sorted, get the material ready. You really don't have a lot of time for listening to other people's stuff live. But I think podcasts are brilliant. I mean, they're a great way of learning, because you can listen then several times, and you can pause it and you can take notes on it. The live radio is really good to listen to, but the podcasts are brilliant for the learning, don't you think?
Yeah, same as YouTube videos. You can keep rewinding them and writing stuff down, can't you? Yeah, it's much better when you can... Because it takes a while to absorb certain information, doesn't it?
It does. That's another thing I think Simon Spaniard's using to great effect is the YouTube video. He's got so many really brilliant things out there. It's hard to keep up with him, really. There's been a quick question in the chat box, actually. I might as well give it to you whilst we have a bit of a pause. I was being asked whether you've heard of Carl Lentz.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I've studied just about everything he's done, yeah. Go on, sorry, mate.
No, carry on.
In fact, somebody sent me the Carl Lentz stuff. In fact, it's the chap who brought him over. I met him last April. And so he sent me the Carl Lentz stuff before anybody else knew, so I got a chance to study it. I suppose, does somebody want my opinion on Carl Lentz?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I guess that's why he asked that. And I've not heard of Carl Lentz, I must admit, so I'd be interested to know.
Okay, I'm on the fence a little bit. Not as him as a chap, but what he's actually achieving. And what Carl Lentz does, and this is what I was going to do 2 years ago, so I mentioned this 2 years ago. if you want to go to court, he's saying to go to Queen's Bench, High Court, Queen's Bench, leave the lower courts and go to High Court in Queen's Bench, which I mentioned over 2 years ago now. And what he does is he's learned about 20 or 30 key words to use that they can't ignore. So, for instance, if he wants the judge to do something, if you wouldn't think, you wouldn't know, but if you use the word require, if you say to the judge, I require of you to do such and such, the judge has to do it. Okay, so we would never think, I'm trying to think of another, wishes. The softer words are the one that's got most power because they're hidden, that's why. Whatever your wishes are, then the magistrates and the judiciary have to do what your wishes are. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Isn't it?
So, I know, unbelievable, isn't it? Carl Lentz has written, I think he's written a legal dictionary and he's learned, I think he's, I don't know if it was his mum was a big lawyer type thing. So he's grown up with this. And there's about 20 odd words that he uses. So what he does is he goes into High Court, he calls himself Iron Man, so there's no corporate name. He says, Iron Man, how does he phrase it? I forgot how to phrase it. I am a man under common law, I'm invoking, and that's another good word, a hearing with a jury, and he insists on a jury in High Court, which people didn't think you could have that. So what he's basically saying is that it's court. Basically what I was saying before, but he's learned some key words. Now, yeah. The problem I've got with this is you have to donate to get these words off him, which is fair enough if he wants to sell the information. I don't know, it might only be a small amount. But it's just a word of warning to people. If they are going to go along to High Court and try this, you need to really research this. Because, excuse me, Collins got a result with a court case by requiring a judge to do a certain thing, and he got a result. But all I'm saying is, I got the feeling Collins didn't tell us everything, and he's got a safety cushion. If he knows it inside out, he can thus defend himself. If we're only getting partial information, I would use those words, certain words, but I'd think very carefully about sort of steaming in and invoking a common law court in High Court and directing the court, unless you really, really do know what you're really doing, though.
Well, one of the problems surely's got to be that you need to have some idea of what might happen next, don't you? You can't, I mean, it's not safe just to assume that using a given spell is going to work. You've got to have some idea of, be able to imagine what some other responses might be, and you need to know how to deal with them as well, I would have thought, don't you?
Yeah, that's it, absolutely, and he's not really done that. It's like me, I teach boxing to a few people of where I live. Imagine if I teach you to box, Doc, and I say, right, that's your jab, that's your right hand, that's a hook, that's an uppercut, and you practice him. And after a few weeks, you say, oh, that's brilliant. And then first time you come to use it, somebody smacks you in the face, and you say, Rob's never taught me what happens when someone smacks me in the face. He's only showed me how to throw a punch. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
That's the bit I'm very wary of. I'm trying not to swear.
Nice metaphor. I really like that one. That's great. Actually, by the by, bring Truth Juice Dave into it again. When I was talking to him last, he was telling me there's a bill going through the Houses of Parliament at the moment, which is intended to remove the need for the Queen to give her assent to future bills in Parliament, and he reckons that might well get rid of the Queen's Bench.
Absolutely, and this is another thing I was going to say about Carl Lentz. Even though it's working, I think he's been a bit orchestrated by the other side and engineered, excuse me, steered down a path slightly to you start using Queen's Bench because they know they're going to phase it out in 12 months. And yet, absolutely, there's bills going through now that take away the need for royal assent for, I don't know if our listeners know, I presume they do, when something, you propose a bill, it has to go through both houses, and eventually when it's on completion, through both houses, I think it's about five or six stages, and they vote on it along the way. It then becomes a statutory instrument, and then the Queen has to give it royal assent. Well, once these bills have gone through, she no longer has to give it royal assent. In effect, it's neutralising any power that she has. And so people just, everyday people on the street just don't know that these bills are going through. And it's up to us. Again, it's down to us, the people. They work for us. Government work for us. They're not there in spite of us. They're our public servants. So it's up to us en masse to say, oh, hang on a minute. Because although I'm not a great fan of Liz's, being Liz, she's got a certain amount of power that we can use and turn back on them again, if you see what I'm saying. And you're quite right. There will be no Queen's Bench left.
Well, that, of course, that's an interesting point because we've talked about it here before, but Dave has brought up the fact that there are a lot of private members' bills going through, all of which are if they do go through, a genuine menace to each and every one of us. Is there anything we can do as individuals to resist this process? I mean, I know that obviously the more of you are, the better, but as individuals, is there anything we can do to kind of, put our little bit of a spanner in the spokes on that?
Well, again, it's down to people and numbers. For instance, the British Transport Police are going to be armed from now on. They're turning them into a militia. There's a bill going through to actually arm them. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to martial law. There's all sorts of nasty bills going through. There's a terrorism one where if they suspect you of terrorism, that's it, just suspect, they can deport you. They're also building 70 new prisons, 70 in this country. So these are all bills that are going through. And the only way to stop them is to actually oppose them in numbers. I don't think enough people have got the time, even the so-called awakened ones. We haven't got enough time to oppose all the bills, and there's certainly not enough people that are unawakened, that are even aware. And so, bearing that in mind, I mean, it does take a while to come through. It may take a year for them to get through. I'm actually constructing something that's really interesting called the People's Mandate. I don't know if I'll have time to talk about it at all on your show, Doc, but well, it's something that I... Go on, mate, sorry.
Why not go for it now? Because it is, I think it's a pretty key piece of work, isn't it? And it's, it's not very long. And like you say, it looks like a very effective approach because the question about what we can do about it has got the answer that what we need is numbers, that as individuals in this particular case, with all these bills going through, there's not a lot we can do. So I think it's worth talking about your People's Mandate. Have you got a copy of it available to read to people so that they can hear what it is? Maybe we have a bit of a chat about it and then have a bit of a comfort break. What do you reckon?
Whatever you want to do, Doc, yeah, whatever you want to do. I've got a copy, actually, and so what do you want to do? Do you want to have a break or whatever you want
to
do?
Let's deal with your People's Mandate, because I think that's a good idea, and, that'll take us to about an hour of chatting, and I think we'll have earned a quick breath of fresh air and a glass of water at that point, and people can go and do whatever it is they want to do, play a couple of tunes and come back. But I thought, I really enjoyed your People's Mandate. It's not very often people send me something and say, look, it's very simple, everybody can understand it, and it is going to be useful if we can make it work. And I look at it and I think, my God, that is really simple. And yeah, it looks to me like it really would work. So yeah, let's give us a quick read of it, because it'll only take you a couple of minutes. And I think it's brilliant.
Oh, thanks. Okay, let me just tell you, hundreds and hundreds of people now have looked at this. Okay, I'm not saying I've got the answers, but the concept of it does resonate. I can't see the chat rooms at the moment, but I want to read it out in a minute. And what it is, because we haven't joined together enough to stop the ever-increasing legislation. I was listening to a Max Egan video, watching and listening to a Max Egan, and I think Ben Stewart from Canada. And just in passing, I heard Max Egan say, if the people could declare or mandate their will, we could, because everybody works for us, the public servants. And then it was like, that light bulb moment, Doc, where you get that spark in your head.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, it's not if, we can. There's nothing stopping us. And so what I realised is that you've got some great groups, organisations like these, the OPPT, the One People's Public Trust.
Yeah,
I presume our listeners have heard of that. They're supposed to have shut down corporations and foreclosed this, and I've not seen any evidence. And there's all these different groups doing great things. But what I realised is, if you join a group that's trying, the reason they're not getting anywhere is that they are steaming in and accusing government, let's say our government, not ours, but the ones in this country, they're steaming in and accusing them of fraud, accusing them of theft, deception, oppression, blah, blah, and just steaming in and accusing them. So what I've got to think about, I thought, hang on a minute. First of all, and nobody else has done this, what I'm doing with the People's Mandate, and I hope it resonates because it has with everybody else. Instead of joining a group or an organisation can always be shut down under terrorism laws. So the OPPT, if you're a member of that, they can close it down instantly because it can be viewed as perceived terrorist because you're in a group or an organisation. So straight away I thought, let's not join groups or organisations. Okay, I thought, well, hang on a minute, how do we get our point across? And what I've realised is that, forget the corporate name, and this is going to be really simple to take on board this. So this People's Mandate, I came up, okay, we are the people, everyday men and women of the geographical landmasses known as England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales. Okay, no addresses, no postcodes, no corporate names. We are the indigenous people. That's it. That's all we are. And so my original concept, which I'm going to read you out now, was for the will of the people to mandate the government, all the different government departments, big businesses, big corporations, banking industry, medical industry, any industry you can imagine, anybody that holds an office, yeah?
Yeah.
What I thought is, well, we're not a group, so we can just put your name on the People's Mandate. You're just a part of people. So that negates that bit. And then I thought, right, instead of going in and steaming in and accusing them of fraud, and I've wrote what's called a preamble doc, which is an introduction that we're gonna send first. And so what I realised is I thought, right, hang on a minute, we know that they're public servants. They're all, every government department, civil service, they are public servants. They work for us. They work for the people. We give them power of attorney, basically. We give them the power they've got. So what I realised is, hang on a minute, if we steam in and start accusing them, they've got nowhere to go. So they're either going to ignore it or put up a fight. What else can they do? So what I've realised is that through the preamble, which we're going to serve on them, we're going to give them 60 days, Doc. Now, this is served on every department that we can think of. We're going to give them 60 days, and it's basically an audit. They work for us. We're going to give them 60 days to show their accounting that every single financial transaction, is above board and adds up. We want to know where our money's going. So that's the first bit, the 60-day. The second part to it, and this is the important part, is that when if they ignore it, then that's it. They've had the 60 days, chances up. If they do manage to come back with some figures and accounts that balance, the second part to the equation is they have to show that when they gained those profits, they kept intact people's fundamental freedoms and rights. People's fundamental freedoms and rights. Now, every corporation that runs under the UK government corporation or whatever, every corporation, every department has to keep intact people's fundamental freedoms and rights. Now, in order to show that the books were balanced and the profits, whatever they made, they have to show that, and they have to show that they kept intact people's fundamental freedoms and rights. Now, for instance, the mortgage industry, they repossess, I don't know how many thousands of houses a week. It's impossible for any of these people, Doc, to show that not only do the books balance perfectly, that there's nothing underhand going on, because we know they're all corrupt, but they've also got to show that they've kept people's fundamental freedoms and rights. Now, repossessing a house with a single mother, for instance, with three kids, no matter how much that lady owes, they've not kept intact her fundamental freedoms and rights. She should not be repossessed. They should come to an agreement where she can perform her maximum on that contract until the situation improves. So can you see what I'm getting at? It basically covers everything you can think of. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, and they do. Okay. They all have in their terms and conditions. They're required, aren't they? All of these corporations, somewhere in there, it does state directly that they're required to uphold fundamental freedoms and rights, which include basically the right of shelter, the right to food, the right to move around freely, amongst others. So it's not an assumption, is it? It's actually stated explicitly in writing in all of these people's cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's in their it's in the European Convention of Human Rights. European Convention of Fundamental Freedoms and Rights. Also, it's in their they'll have a corporate charter if they are banks and stuff, or they'll have a code of practice if it's a corporation. And every single one of them, their code of practice or charter, has to uphold what's in the European Convention is to keep in touch and be mindful of people's fundamental freedoms and rights, okay?
Yeah.
So we've got them straight away. So I'm just going to read you this out, what I wrote, okay? The people's mandate, okay. The legal system cannot be used by us against the corrupt government because it was not constructed to afford people remedy, but rather to tie people up in red tape and to protect that very system itself, therefore inferring that our remedy lies outside the legal system. So just shout up if it doesn't make sense or anything, Doc, if I'm talking box or anything. The legal system was designed by the system to protect itself. And the only remedies available to people are to recognise matters as criminal or tortuous and hold the perpetrators individually and privately liable. Therefore, anything that falls under the banner of the legal system sees anything and everybody else outside of itself as an enemy, as foreign, as alien, or as an occupier. So if people or bodies don't fall under the remit, under the scope of the legal system, they are therefore seen by the system as either unrecognisable or as an aggressor to the system. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that if you don't fall under the legal system, if you're outside of it, this is how they view us.
So if
they
you
won't recognise us in courts.
That's basically if you don't stand under it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Then they will not recognise you, or you are an aggressor to the system, yeah? So what I wrote is a critical mass of people can come together and mandate the will of the people by instructing the government to hold all our public servants there, because they're our public trustees. Eventually, they'll be accountable for breach of trust. This is after we do the audit. And they'll thus be forced to comply with the mandate and the will of the people once it was delivered correctly, which is the key to this. I also put, we must collapse the fictional trusts set up by the government stroke crown in our names and denounce the ownership of our names by the crown. That was achieved by the construction of the birth certificate. Okay, so we've got to denounce those fictional trusts claiming ownership of our surnames. It's nearly done now, mate.
Yeah.
The foundation of the mandate from its very core as one golden rule, and everything else from there, everything else from there on is built up around this one rule. Do no harm to another living soul. The government's failure to comply with the will of the people would leave them unable to continue, and they would have to step down and be replaced by others selected by the people. All it takes is enough of us to join together in an ever-growing number and deliver the people's mandate to the government, dictating our terms from the people, by the people, and for all the people. And when we do it in this country, maybe other countries will follow. So that's the basis of it. Does that even make sense?
It did make sense, and the other thing is that... is that we know it can be done, because it's, I mean, it's slightly different technique, but it's exactly what happened to the politicians and the bankers in Iceland.
Absolutely.
It's exactly what happened to them. They said they forced them out, presumably through similar means. And I gather it's happening in Hungary now as well.
Yes, I've heard that. Yeah, Hungary. But I don't know if you're ready for a break, though. I'll just finish it off now so we get to the main... This is why it'll work when others, groups and associations have failed. So first we're not... Excuse me. First we're not accusing them. We're having an audit. We're balancing the books. We're seeing how... It's like if you and I own a company, Doc, and the staff aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. We call a meeting. We have a look at what they've been doing. And if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing properly, we sack them off, don't we? And that's in effect what it is. But I just want to quote something from Ayn Rand, or I think you pronounce it Ayn Rand. She said, the primary objective of any society or civilization is for the majority to protect the freedoms and rights of the minority, okay? And she went on to say that, and the smallest minority is the individual, okay?
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, one person, well, I don't like using person, but... one man or woman who puts their name on that mandate, who feels that they've been wronged in some way, it might be something, and this is the beauty of this, you don't have to be awake to get the concept of this. You may have got a 15 quid parking ticket, written out, or you might not be able to afford your council tax bill, or your rent's gone up last 2 years, or it could be anything. If you feel that your freedoms and rights have been infringed by any organisation, company, government department, civil servant, whatever, you stick your name on the mandate, yeah? Or it can be something massive. You've had major injustices. You don't even have to understand it. And the beauty is, I'll finish off on this now, Doc. The beauty is that you don't sign anything. No money changes hands. You don't put your corporate name on. It's whatever you're commonly called. So, for instance, there's no addresses or postcodes. So, for instance, my name will be the first one on, Rob Freeman, from the geographical, living on the geographical landmass known as Sheffield, on the geographical landmass of England. That's it. That's all that gets added to it. And what's going to happen is, once we've done the audit and they aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, the definition of terrorism is to take away the right to self-govern, and this is what I'm coming to. The rights of one individual is just as important as the rights of everybody. So if they cannot ignore us, if all we're short of is names on that list, because eventually there'll be a tipping point. And what we're saying is, basically, whether you were corrupt, we don't have to accuse them of fraud, we don't have to go threatening them with jail sentences or whatever. Basically, that's the audit, it doesn't add up. You didn't keep intact our freedoms and rights, the public that you serve. So will you please now step down, and we have the right to self-govern. If not, it's classed as terrorism, and the people will deal with terrorism. Now, like I said, you're going to get police officers that are disgruntled, and everybody who's not had a wrong done against them, though.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that made sense. That's to rattle on forever then.
Yeah, no, that really makes sense to me. Yeah, like you say, who hasn't had a wrong done to them? Who couldn't put their name on that? I think that's really great. I mean, another way of thinking about it is that all of these public servants receive substantial benefits as a result of their position as trustees, and with those benefits come duties and obligations, and all you would be doing is asking them to document and validate that they are fulfilling the obligations that have been placed upon them in return for the benefits.
Absolutely well put, mate. Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. So all we're doing is asking them to justify their actions. That is it.
I remember talking to Darren Dioji about his People's Public Trust, and we came up with a fantastic statement to sum up what that was. He said, you know, when people ask you who the People's Public Trust are, the answer was, we are an association, so that's to get rid of so that you're not a member of a group or anything. We are an association of ex-public servants, private trusts, and interested individuals who are seeking excellence in public service.
Wow, brilliant.
And it works really well when used on judges and the like, so I'm told. They have a tendency to retreat quite rapidly. Just before we go to a break, there was a question in there from Neon in the chat box, and I hope it makes sense to you, because it's he says, what's the difference between your people's mandate and a writ of mandamus?
Absolutely nothing. Well, great question.
Good question.
In effect, that is what we'll be doing. We will be serving writs on them. I think the only difference is the amount of men and women that are going to get involved. This won't work. Great question, by the way, that. This won't work if it's 5,000 people or 10,000 people. I'm going to spend all 2014... promoting this, going round, doing talks, different cities and towns. Eventually, you see, the only thing that the side can do is ignore us. If we serve writs, we will be able to make arrests. Now, it can't be violent, as we know, it's got to be peaceful. If we can get 1 million people, that's going to make them sit up and take notice. And we don't stop. That's 1 million people wanting to exercise the right to self-govern. Now, obviously, if they do step down, it's not over. That's the starting point for us. That's the starting point for us to select. And we will have people in that 1 million people. We'll have accountants. We'll have people who are officers or have been officers of the law. We can even train people up. We can have our own courts. It's starting again. But what I'm saying is, we will serve writs. And the only difference is the amount of people that's going to get involved. And it will grow and it will take time. But I can't see how it can ever be stopped.
No, quite so. I mean, my feeling is that there must, there are some people who are making a study of standing in the shadow, but there are many, many people who have accidentally fallen into the shadow and haven't got the initiative or the will or the reason to step out of it again. And I really do have the feeling that given the right stimulus, given the right hope of success, that there must be loads of people working in the court service, working in the police, working for the army, working in education, working in the health service, the list is almost endless, who do not want it to be going the way it's going. They want to do a proper job. The vast number of people are decent, and what they want to do is learn to sing each other's songs, cook each other's food, and dance each other's dances. And given a chance, I reckon a whole load of people would jump on this.
Absolutely, mate. Well put. And these cops don't want to be writing tickets out. They don't want to be writing tickets out for stupid things. They got in there to prevent crime and detect crime. And judges initially must have got in there to take that position up, to administer justice. It's just that the whole thing's been turned on its arse. And I know 100% there are people helping us. We're keeping a low profile. Not all bailiffs want to kick your door down and throw you out. All right, there's not many, but there are some that don't want to do it. All right, they should go and get another job. But what I'm, point I'm trying to make is to reiterate what you said, Doc. They don't all want to do it. They've all got kids. They've got grandchildren. They've got pensions, and they want to be retiring. They want to see a better. Everyone wants to see a better world. And so the beauty is it's a common name added onto the list on a geographical landmass. So even they will be joining it, because everybody agrees that the system in place, like you said, our trustees, our public servants, they are doing the crappiest job ever. So it's time for them to go, isn't it? And I think everybody agrees that. No matter what walk of life you're in, you must agree that they're doing a shocking job, aren't they?
Yeah, quite so. I think that's a really good place to take a bit of a break. Thanks a lot, Rob. That was brilliant. I mean, we've... like I said, when I sent you that kind of a sheet of notes that I'd made, just thinking of what I wanted to talk to you about, we've barely grazed the surface of it in our first kind of like hour and 20 minutes or so. But I think we've got, and at the same time, we've managed to get a lot of stuff across that wasn't in the earlier interviews you did on TNS. So I think it's great. And the chat boxes look to be pretty engaged with you. You're a very popular man, you are. So I'm
really
yeah
must well, be this aftershave. It's
really great to hear it all put in a way that people can comprehend, and I think that's one of the jobs we've been doing over these years with the radio shows, with the road shows, with the talks, is actually not only working on comprehending this material, but working slowly, distilling it, slowly getting it to the point where normal individuals can understand it. And that in itself has surely got to be a motivating factor, because people are really put off by difficult words, you know. You can just see them, the slide response comes in, words that people don't understand are not going to encourage them to take action because they can't see the relevance of the situation to their own position. And by doing the sort of stuff, I think you really do put it in words that, you know, everybody can understand, and that's really got to be helpful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of people can't read documents, can they, Doc, and take it in and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I've got many gifts or talents, but one I have got is to take a complicated subject and articulate it back out in a simple form, because I am basically a simple sort of chap. So, yeah, we need to be able to understand everything. It needs to be in plain English. No language of the law, no flipping esoteric language or Norman French or whatever, just plain common English language that we use in simple form so everybody can understand it.
Absolutely great. And I think on that note, we'll put on one of Litmus's tracks. I think we'll play No Tax for War. He's a great believer in straight words. Stick your tax up your cracks, you government whores. So
lovely.
We've got about I'll put about 10 minutes of tunes on, Rob. And if you haven't come back from wherever you are, I'll put another one on. There's no rush, and we'll tackle a few more points.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks. I'll stick kettle on. Thanks, and I'll see you shortly.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, see you in a bit. So you are, of course, folks, listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on sovereigninternetradio.com, but you can call us Sir, and scotlandisfree.ning.com. I shall nip into the SIR chat box and have a quick scan, see what's going on in there, see if I've missed any questions. In the meantime, here's my old mate Litmus, and from projectfreeman.com, another really great website. He's done a lot of research. He's done exactly what we've just been describing, which is put things into very simple terms. He's done a lot of work. It's very easy to navigate, and the kind of background information to the sort of stuff that Rob's talking about is, I believe, all there. So it's another great place to go to. And so here he is, and we'll be back with you in about 10 minutes or so, if all goes according to plan. Tar, of course, to all of you for being out there. It's really great to see so many people in two chat boxes, even if it is a bit difficult looking at one with one eye and one with the other. We'll be back with you shortly, folks. Frank Zappa there, and on the slime oozing out from your TV set off, I think it was off Overnight Sensation. Can't quite remember. Before that, The Clash and Know Your Rights. You have the right not to be killed, you have the right to food and money, and you have the right to free speech. And anybody who tells you otherwise is lying to you. And before that, of course, Litmus and No Tax for War. ProjectFreeman.com. Thoroughly recommend it to anybody. If you know all the stuff already, and none of us know all of it, it's a great place to revise. And my bet is that most of us, not everybody here, but most of us will find stuff on there that we didn't already know. So it's back to Rob Freeman. You come back to us, Rob.
Yep, I can hear you fine. I'm back, mate, yep.
Absolutely brilliant. Let me just see if I can find my way back to my notes. On the subject of the People's Mandate, I was saying to you whilst we were listening to the music there, I think that's a really great idea. And I think that, you know, in conjunction with all the other things we're doing, I'd really like to stay up with that one and take it around with me and put it in front of, because I do a lot of talking at festivals. I like to say I talk at Truth Juice and New Horizons, and basically anywhere anybody will give me a stage, I'll go along and have a go. And I think that's a great thing that can be tacked on either the beginning or the end, or the beginning and the end of everything else I'm doing. So you've got me behind you on that one, and I suspect many people in the chat box too.
Cheers, mate. What I'm going to do, Doc, is spend all year touring around and getting people to understand the concept. And what we're going to try and do is, if it takes all year, by 2015, which just happens to be 800 years exactly after Magna Carta, it's when us, the people, are going to take back our power and take back control of it, mate.
Well, one of the things I really enjoyed on your podcast was the quick summary you did of the life of Jesus, and how all of the stories in the Bible, and it's true of all of the Mayan myths and all the other myths that we find around the world, are actually to do with what was going on in the night sky. They're all to do with allegories. And I know you've come across Santos Bonacci as well, haven't you, in your time?
I have. I've interviewed him. Yeah. Can I just jump in, Doc, quickly?
Yeah. Go for it.
I was asked to do the story of the Jesus, and I know there are religious people listening, and I got a bit of stick off a couple of people when I did those. I did it in three stages. About the Jesus myth, and I just want to clear something up. In fact, there's a couple of people in this chat room now that didn't quite get the concept of what I was saying. What I was saying in those three shows, because there were three stages to it, Doc, is that the story that the Gospels, supposed Gospels, tell us of the story of Jesus is a myth, that is all allegory, it's basically astrotheology. But what I didn't get a chance to say on those shows, because as you know, we're always pushed for time, is as far as we know, they may have been an historical figure called Jesus that actually did live. Now, it wasn't anything like the story that they gave. And what we think he was, he goes back to a line of maybe originally from King David, or maybe to a line of pharaohs. But the Jesus that did live, and I don't even think it's around the same time, there's an order, which I spoke about on the last conference that I did, 1st of December. There's an order called the Order of Melchizedek, or Melchizedek. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. And Melchizedek, we think, the original Jesus that did live, his line goes back to King Melchizedek. And he was a king in an area, a real estate area called Salem, which later became Jerusalem. That's where they get the film Salem's Lot, by the way. So King Melchizedek was the first one that was, he was the king of his country, but he was also a royal priest. And for me, this is where the origins of church and state come from. So he was a holy king, and he was also a royal priest. And so that was the merging, and for my research, the original source of church and state together, because he held both offices. And any Jesus figure that did actually live through historical times, we think was a direct descendant of King Melchizedek. So I just thought I'd throw that out, because some people got offended. I said that Jesus didn't exist, not in the way that the New Testament tells us, you see. So I just wanted to clear that up for a couple of people in the chat room.
I think you were very clear about it as well. You know, this is supposed to be a world of freedom of choice, freedom of speech and freedom of ideas. You know, what other people think is their business, and, you know, it shouldn't upset other people, ideally. There's far more important things to be concerned about than what other people are saying and thinking.
Yeah, agreed, yeah. Sorry to sidetrack.
No, that's all right. What I was going to say about it is that the whole point of that particular allegory is that there are times of shadow and there are times of light. And as I think Santos Bonacci, I mean, it takes him a lot more time to say it than it did you, I must admit, Rob. Yours was very pleasingly summarised, brief and to the point. But what Santos is saying is that this is a time of awakening. This is a time when we're expecting a change in consciousness. And by changing consciousness, we will change the way the world appears to us, because perception is a creative act. And so is that not exactly what we're seeing here? The work we're doing here, the awakening we're seeing, the people around us, is a change in consciousness. It is an awakening. It is an unveiling. And what the dark t-shirts are doing is facilitating that process. The dark power holders are doing their job well, because many of us would just be sitting with our feet up and a glass of wine gazing out the window if it wasn't for the stimulus we're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, well put. Absolutely fantastically put. And what I want to remind listeners is, I know it all seems terrible at the moment and terrible things are happening, but this is an absolutely beautiful thing that's happening. The awakening you just spoke about, that spiritual awakening and this awareness, it's part of our evolution spiritually. It's an absolutely beautiful thing that's happening. And it's real special times that we've, I think, chosen to come back here. And like I say, all the people that are part, I don't like calling it a truth movement, but all those people that have become awake and aware, including all our listeners now and everybody in the chat rooms, you know, give yourself a pat on the back, because it's a fantastic energy that you individually, all of us, are adding to the collective. And it's a fantastic, it's a fantastic step in our spiritual evolution that's really resounding worldwide. So really be proud of yourself for what we're doing and what we're achieving.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's like breathing in and breathing out. You've got to do both things. There's got to be expansion and contraction. And we're coming out of a period of contraction and we're going into a period of expansion. That's what I think anyway. Let's return a little bit to some of the stuff that you talked about before. And I know this is another bit of information that Simon Spaniard came up with, and you picked up on it and gave us some thoughts about it. I'd just like to know how far we're getting with it. It's the one to do with the Local Government Act 1888, which states somewhere in it, in a bit that hasn't been repealed, that all duties and liabilities of inhabitants of a county shall become and be the duties and liabilities of the council of such a county. When we last heard from you, you were in search of an instrument to actually execute this and make it real. Are we making any progress on that?
No, it's not something I've pursued, but what I've done is I've passed it on to a lot of people. And what I realised after I'd said that, Doc, because obviously I don't get everything right, is why am I looking for an instrument? The Act is there, it's never been repealed. All we've got to do is notify the other side of it. So I've not done anything, but I've passed it on to so many people. And quite a few people have used this and sent it out. The only thing the other side are doing, Doc, is ignoring it and carrying on regardless. That's the only thing they can do. Never once have they rebutted it, never once have they tried to explain it, never once have they said it's wrong. All they've done is ignore it and carry on regardless. This is what I'm saying, same with that mandate thing and everything that we're doing. All they can do, because we've found it now, we've swept all the cobwebs away, we've blown the dust, wiped the shit away, and the truth's there. And we're now starting to use their own codes, bylaws, regulations, rules against them now. So it's not a perfect system to oppress us, we've found it. And all they're doing, Doc, is ignoring. So more and more people are sending that off and trying to pass the duties and liabilities off to the off to the county councils, as it states in that particular, I think it's Local Government Act, is it 1888, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it was.
And all they're doing is ignoring it, and that's all they can do. So this is why even more scope for the people to join together and say, no longer can our servants ignore us, you work for us. You know, if I'm wealthy and I've got five cleaners who clean my house, and my house is a shithole, I'm going to get rid of them, aren't I? They're not doing the job.
Yeah, you know.
They keep ignoring me and they want the wages every week. Well, you can only ignore me for so long, but I'm going to sack you off. And that's all they can do, Doc. They're just ignoring it. And again, for our listeners and everybody, if they are ignoring you and they're not rebutting or telling you that you are wrong, they're not coming up with evidence, then you know you're on the right track, because that's all they can do is ignore it.
And the best way is to keep chipping away at it on that basis, isn't it? Keep putting it across the desks.
Yep, and clog their system up. They love the paperwork, don't they, Doc? So 10 people send that county council that. All right, it's clogged up a bit. 100 people send it. Well, what if 5,000 or 10,000 people all send emails, text messages, letters in paper form, and just flood them and say, look, this is the act. Tell me that I'm wrong. Tell me that I can't pass my duties and liabilities to you. Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can. As a matter of interest, do you think there's a difference between writing to them in blue pen on paper and sending them an email or a printed letter?
It's a good question. At one time, what it is for me is I've had more results by actually physically writing. Whenever I've written anything, just written it like that court thing, or like I said, in the toilet. So whenever I handwrite something, I get a better result than typing it out and putting some sort of signature. Obviously, you always sign. I usually sign in red ink or purple. Blue is good enough because it's commerce, but never, ever, ever sign anything in black ink. I presume everybody knows that, well, I should imagine, don't they?
Did you hear Truth Juice Dave's story about that? This was, I thought it was fabulous. He needed, for some reason or another, to get a copy of his birth certificate. And so he went down the local birth certificate office. And he told me that in there, every single pen is red. They give you a red pen to fill in the forms necessary to get your birth certificate replaced. And the only black, he said, the only black pen in the whole place was held by the registrar. The person who signed you in and out. Isn't that interesting?
Wow, how interesting. So the registrar's a dead entity, everybody's a living human man or woman. Wow, how interesting, mate.
Now, I would guess that you're only alive whilst you're filling the stuff in red ink and stuff, and as you leave the place and she signs you out, you're killed again.
Exactly.
Another thing, something I was pondering about, and I don't know whether you've got any thoughts on it, is that 1888 thing, it says all duties and liabilities of inhabitants of a county. Now, it occurs to me that most of us, for one reason or another, are classified as citizens rather than inhabitants. Do you think it might be important for us to establish that we are an inhabitant rather than a citizen for this to work?
For anything to work, never ever call yourself a citizen. Citizens are given benefits and privileges and maybe certain rights. And that's why that act is so important, because it actually calls us inhabitants. And so the object of any council, borough councils or whatever, county councils, is to protect the people of the borough, not the persons, which is corporate, but the people of the borough. So you always call yourself an inhabitant. Can I just answer a question in the chat room, Doc, that somebody's just posed?
Yeah, go for it. Please do.
Okay. It'll take 2 seconds. It's for Herbie, who's asking about significance of black ink. Just to let you know, Herbie, whenever they want you to sign a document, they want you to sign it in black ink. And black ink signifies that you are a dead entity. So in other words, you're not even a living human. So there's four main colours, really. Black means you're dead. If you sign it in blue, it's sort of commercial. It becomes a commercial document, which you can sign in blue. If you're signing, this is your name that you're signing, Irby. If you sign your name in red, it means you are a living, breathing, sentient, alive man or woman. And if you sign it in purple, which I do now, it means that you are sovereign. So those four colours are important, but never ever, no matter how much they ask, never sign your name in black, Irby. Okay, all right, sorry about that, Doc.
No, that's very good. That's very good, because the ink thing is another thing that, I mean, when I first heard I thought that's really bizarre. But I do remember, you know, we used to be told to write things in black because it photocopied better and yeah, things okay. like that. And yeah, I tried it out, you know, and I tried it out and actually all of them photocopy really well, because, you know, photocopiers are quite good machines, really. They'll photocopy whatever it is that's bloody in front of them. what do you think it is? I mean, I heard, one of the things I heard is that putting your name on the electoral roll makes you a citizen, and that having a bank account makes you a citizen. What do you think of that?
Absolutely, absolutely, it does. Well, it implies, it's implied consent from yourself. It's almost like tacit agreement. By doing that, you are accepting to be classed as a citizen. And again, if you've got your name on the electoral roll, mine's gone, I think. I got rid of it ages ago. If you have got a name on the electoral roll, it means you're silently consenting. Whether you vote or not, you're silently consenting to be categorised as a citizen. That's why there's key words like, as you know, occupant of your house. They call you an occupant, or an occupier. You're the occupier, you're occupying a property. And if you're an occupier, that's what armies do when they invade other countries, they occupy another country. So if you agree to be an occupier in your house, you're a foreign invading militia that shouldn't be there. Again, you've got no rights. So there's loads of key words to learn, you see.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, hang on a moment, I just lost my track there. I was thinking, oh yeah, that's right, that's another of the, by the way, that's another of the bills that's going through the House of Lies at the moment, is a bill which intends to remove your access to public services if your name is not on the electoral roll, which I suspect would apply to an awful lot of us. And I've been wondering whether public service that they'll withdraw includes things like the police and prisons.
Yeah, exactly. The police have got no duty of care to look after you, neither have ambulance service or fire service.
Haven't they?
No, they've got absolutely... Because the police, ambulance service and fire service are now corporate, they're officers, corporate officers, they've got no duty of care to look after you as a living human man or woman. What they have got a duty of is to make sure that they allow you certain... grant you certain... benefits and privileges that you are allowed as a corporate entity. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It explains quite a lot, doesn't it? It explains, for example, why the police are allowed to lie to us in order to get whatever it is they're after. Another little known fact, I suspect.
Do you know if a shop or a business premises gets burgled, the police are around there in about 3 minutes. But people whose homes are being burgled, they ring police up and they don't come for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because in your own jurisdiction inside your house, they know you're not a corporate entity. And so they're not bothered about looking after you. They'd rather look after a shop. I don't know, if Tesco's getting broken into, it probably earns millions a year, but they'll be straight round to Tesco because it's a corporate entity.
I didn't know that you weren't a corporate entity when you were in your own domicile or dwelling or whatever we want to call it.
Well, you are until they trick you. Oh, that's another good thing I wanted to talk about really quickly is, and it fits in with this, is the word jurisdiction. When we talk about jurisdiction, jurisdiction, Doc, is really just the venue that you're at. Yeah?
Yeah.
So when we go along to court, it's a fight for jurisdiction, but we're in their premises, that another key word. But it's the venue. That's why when we go to court, they want to charge you revenue. They want to revenue you when you go there. And when you're in your own home, it's the common law of the land. It's not the law of sea, which is the law of money, basically. So if we start thinking of jurisdiction as the venue, the actual venue that you're in, and so in your own home, you have got property rights as well. But you can be a man. You can be a living, breathing man called John Thompson. Not, you know, we don't call each other in our families Mr. John Thompson, do we? It's only when you want to engage in commerce, or if you set foot on the streets and start to walk outside, whenever you're spending money, you're engaged in commerce. So you're then viewed first and foremost as a corporate entity, as a living human man, lastly. But in your own home, an English man, well, a British man's home is his castle, and you are king of the castle. Very difficult for a policeman, a police officer, to enter your home. he's either got to have massive reasonable suspicion and just cause to get a warrant to come in. He really has got to be confident that he suspects that a crime is going off. And so you are really king of your castle, if you know what to say.
Or like a vampire, you have to invite him in or open the door.
Do you know, we were just talking about that the other day. We are psychically being vampirized, our energy's being sucked off, but well, that's a terrible phrase of the truth. Sorry about that. Our energy's been sucked away from us. And you're right, we have to invite them in. That's why I posed this question on somebody's show the other night, is why do they have to have consent? Why are they tricking us? All right, they are forcing us, but it's still have to have consent. And from a more esoteric point of view, an energetic point of view, it's absolutely right, Doc, what you've just said there. In order for those dark entities right at the top to feed off our energy, they have to have our consent. And it boils down to, you have to invite a vampire into your home, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what they are doing. They are sucking our energy, and they might as well be sucking our blood, eh?
Yeah, that's where they are. They are as well.
Is it right that your letterbox is effectively an open door within your door, do you think?
Yeah, receiving post is, again, you're submitting, it's all about jurisdiction, you're submitting to jurisdiction by receiving post. I've done some, I know you probably will have seen that I did some stuff on mortgages, but by the way, there's no legal definition for address, you know. There is no legal definition for the word address. But if you live on a street in a postcode with a letterbox and you receive post, then we are submitting to their jurisdiction.
Does it make any difference if your postbox is kind of outside your gate, like?
Mine is outside my gate. Well, actually, I don't think it does, but I had a police officer knocking on my window. I've not got any doors on the street. I've just got windows. And they were trying to serve me, some documents from a previous driving offence. And I opened the window, and he had these documents. He were begging me to take them. And I said, oh, no. I said, I want to shut the window. And he says, I'll stand with my hands behind my back. And he put his hands behind his back because I didn't want him to throw them through and serve them. And I got chatting to him and I said, look, I'm not accepting any documents from anybody today. If you come back another time, I may reconsider. But I'm not actually accepting any documents off anybody. I won't tell him who my name was. And then as we were going, he says, I've got an outside postbox on a gate, like you said. He says, does this postbox belong here? And I said, I'm not here to answer your questions, mate. Can you please go away? And I thought he'd serve him through a letterbox, but he didn't. Now, that tells me that maybe an outside letterbox, all right, it's not as good as having no letterbox, but it may be slightly better than it could. He never actually served those documents. He never managed it. I expect him next morning to, when I went out to my car, to jump on me with these documents and stick him in my mouth, shove him in my gob, but he never did.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because their behaviour often does reveal things to us that we might suspect to be true, but not actually know.
Absolutely. To write his report that he'd served the documents, he couldn't say 100% of that outside letterbox. It's not got a number on. He couldn't say 100% that it belonged to this property, so I think he'd rather not risk it. So maybe you are better off having an outside letterbox.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Another thing I've heard you talking about, and this was another thing that intrigued me a little bit, is that we've got different classes of offence. We have arrestable and non-arrestable offences. How do we know what's what?
I know. Isn't it? It's a blooming minefield, isn't it? Well, what we call arrestable offences and what the police and courts call arrestable offences are two different things. For ourselves, for myself, I realised very early on that I'm going to get arrested quite a lot and it's going to become a bit of an occupational hazard. And so I kind of got used to it. And I got invited to their to the local jail quite a few times. And yeah, I had my own room and everything. They didn't put me a telly or an Xbox up, but yeah, I kept going to the same cell every time. So what I realised is, as part of an occupational hazard, I'm going to keep getting arrested. Now, I've been arrested every single time for non-arrestable offences, which is incredible, really. and it's all for them to get you into contract to be that corporate entity. They cannot take action on a living human, man or woman, unless you've committed a crime. Infringing or on a statutory instrument, in other words, a statutory offence is non-arrestable every single time. You have to commit a crime to be arrested.
Yeah. Well, that, at least that explains why I thought everything was an arrestable offence. If they do arrest you for non-arrestable offences, then it's a moot point, isn't it?
It is, but they won't recognise that because they want you. They want to create joinder. They want you to be Mr. Doc Rock, 22 such and such, and they want your date of birth, and then they've got those three joinder, and they can act on your corporate person. When you get took to court, they work on you commercially on that name, and that's how the whole thing works. And can I just briefly say what a crime is, so that everybody does quite understand what a crime is?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for
it. Okay, cheers. Right, for a crime to be a crime, there has to be about three things present. One, there has to be an injured party. Sainsbury's, Orange mobile phones, if you don't pay them, there's no injured party. There has to be an injured party that suffered some sort of harm, injury or loss. So in other words, if I run up and hit you over the back of the head and take your money, then that is a crime because a living human has suffered. You suffer some sort of harm, loss or injury or all three. So you would then come forward, make a complaint to the police station, actually sign with a life signature, a witness statement. So that's your claim that I did it against me. So in order for it to a crime to be a crime, it has to have an injured party. I think it's called corpus delicti. It has to have an injured party. What else has it got to have? It's got to have an injured party. It's also got to have a claim from that injured party to be an actual crime. Somebody has got to have suffered. Well, any statutory offence, driving 41 in a 30, there's no injured party, there's no crime. I got, they tried to give me 6 months prison for driving whilst disqualified, and they called it a criminal trial. Well, I said in court, well, who's the injured party? You know, let them stand up. Where's their sworn witness statement? You see, a corporation can't take you to court for a crime unless somebody from that corporation is willing to sign with first-hand knowledge a witness statement. Can you see the difference?
Yeah.
So you have to have an injured party that is willing to swear out either an affidavit or a witness statement to say that you've been injured. But an interesting part is, for a crime even to be a crime, it's got to have the acts, I think it's called actus reus, the act of what you're doing. So it's got to have actus reus. These are the three things for a crime. Actus reus is the physical act of what you're doing. And it's got to have something called mens rea. Now, mens rea is a guilty mind. So, for instance, if you commit a crime but you don't know it's a crime, then all these three things have got to be present. Actus reus is a physical act. Mens rea is the guilty mind, so you know that you're doing wrong. And then the injured party, the corpus delicti. Any one of those three that's not present, you cannot have committed a crime.
The second of those is effectively intent, isn't it?
It is intent, yeah. And I know we're not going to talk about it tonight, but for instance, imagine I've got a party in my garden and we're all having a few beers. And imagine I start showing off and I swing a shovel round and I hit somebody on the back of the head and they get really hurt. Now, have I committed a crime? What do you think I've committed a crime?
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
But there's an injured party, so what happens?
Well, you haven't got all three of the things that you set out there, have you? You've got one of them.
No. Right, and this is what I want to explain to listeners. So, by rights, if it's not a statutory offence, which it's not, but somebody's been physically harmed, but I've not committed a crime, do I walk away scot-free? Well, it's not fair, is it? Back to honour and dishonour. It wouldn't be fair, would it, if I did injure someone, to walk away scot-free? So what we've got hidden away that's now coming to the surface is those three things weren't present. I did the act. I did definitely. 10 people saw me swinging the shovel round. There's a corpus delicti. There is an injured party, but the second one, they cannot prove mens rea. So this is where something called tort comes in. T-O-R-T. Okay. Tort. An explanation of tort is that I swung that shovel round, not with, like you quite rightly say, not with the intent of hurting that bloke, but I should have known better swinging a shovel round in front of 10 people in a confined space.
Fair enough.
I had a duty and an obligation to care and attention that on the balance of probability somebody would have got hurt. So that person that does get hurt can have redress and some sort of recourse in something called tort. So what I want, the point I'm trying to get over is you've got statutory, which are just rules and regulations, infractions, and all they are is they go to your corporate name. Then you've got the crime where you have an injured party and those three things, have to, those three elements have to be present. And somewhere along those two, and leaning towards more towards crime, is something called tort. And if you think about it, Doc, it really does make sense that, because that chap, who, if he did get hit with that shovel, needs recompensating in some way, although I don't get locked up as a crime. And the punishment mainly, 99% of the time for tort, is financial compensation. So really the law's quite a beautiful thing, isn't it, when you understand it?
Yeah, and there's a difference as well, isn't there, between setting out to kill somebody and going and doing it, and accidentally killing somebody. I found myself on a murder trial once, and it seemed to me to be pretty clear that the guy didn't murder the guy. He did kill him, but he didn't intend to. It was just a it was a kind of horrendous string of circumstances, really, and the law treats that differently as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it comes back to that intent, doesn't it? It comes back to that intent, like you said earlier. Everything comes back to intent.
Yeah. We've got a few questions popped up in the chat box. One of them returns to the subject of ink, colours thereof. And I remember, you know, people are looked at kind of askance. There's a load of pejorative opinions of people who write in green ink. I remember hearing this. And Nick's asking whether writing in green ink is taken as being indicative of mental illness.
Well, that's absolutely something I know nothing about and not thought of. So I'm going to look into that. Well, I might start writing in green. I don't know. Interesting question. Thanks. I've never thought of that. I'll be on it now. I'll be on it after this show.
What else have we got? We've got. If somebody is trying to deliver a recorded delivery package or letter or something, and you refuse to sign it because you don't recognise it, does that cause any potential problems?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I've just, on the 10th of December, I've sent documents to the CEO of my local borough council and the Lord Mayor. I've tried to serve documents on them it cost me £2 each, basically to send these documents. And you know what? It's now the 16th of January, and you can track it when you do, most people know, when you do recorded delivery, you have a tracking number, you can check it. Do you know, to this day, it's still not been signed for, and it's now 16th of January. So I would say that If you don't sign for it, it's classed as not being served, and this is why I think they're both in the town hall in my town, the Lord Mayor and the CEO of the Borough Council. And I think what they've done, I think they've got something going on with the post office, and they've had a sneaky look and put it back and said, no thanks, we're not signing. And yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, I've not been able to serve those documents on them. But interestingly enough. And this is, again, it's the opposite. If you put something in normal post, it's classed as served. So it's catch 22. If you stick it in a normal post box, just normal first class stamp, whatever, even second class, it's classed as served, but you've got no proof they've got it. If you try and do it properly with a tracking number and everything, 9 times out of 10 they'll sign for it, but these people haven't. Mm. So I would say don't sign for anything, record a delivery for yourself, never sign anything.
Yeah, Nick Nomix said that in the chat box, best not to sign for anything that you don't recognise. If you don't know it's coming, don't sign for it.
And be very selective anywhere where you put your signature, absolutely anywhere.
And we should be selective about where we put our signature because, Rob?
Well, your signature really, it's the sign of nature. The other side will never ever, corporations will never ever sign anything live with a live signature, unless they're just passing information on, then they will. As soon as they are issuing any sort of demand on your financial or be it or whatever, or command, whoever puts pen to paper, whoever signs it, instantly assumes liability if everything goes tits up. And because they know that they are committing fraud, they will never put pen to paper. And so what you've got to realise is that whenever you put your signature on any piece of paper, in any ink really, but it's a little bit more safeguarded in red, blue, and especially red and purple. Mm. But what you are in effect saying, irrespective of the ink, is that you are assuming full liability. That's why you have to swear an affidavit, a sworn out statement of truth, and a police witness statement. Like I said earlier, if you were doing one against me, you'd sign it. And that's your truth. That's you stood under full liability, swearing at the truth. Now, the problem is that financial institutions like banks and stuff and mortgage industry and all those sort of people are making money on our signatures, because a signature, you instantly assume liability, and they're creaming off those liabilities that we're creating with our signature. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that's very clear, that is. Can we, this is a subject that interests me particularly, and I think probably many other people have got an interest in it as well. One of the main costs in my life at the moment is keeping the sodding van on the road. And I was, you feeling all right, Rob?
It's my dog.
I thought, maybe whining at the idea of work.
Doc, can I just let him out?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
It's all right, my lad's late. My lad's letting him out, it's okay.
Very good. I'd like to find out how you're getting on with the business of recording cars in the ownership of private trusts, because that's something you talked about before. Can you give us a summary as to how you get a car into private trust, what the advantages of it might be, and how's that project going?
Well, for myself, I've not got my car now because I've had to scrap it, really. I'm getting a fairly decent one in 2 months. But the three people that started doing it just before me, and mine always went all right. In fact, I parked a... the car that I was scrapping, I parked it on a public road on purpose. I only pay about 400, 500 quid for them. And it had no tax or insurance, but it was unregistered. And I parked it on a public street, and it was there for 6 months, and it never got a ticket. It had flat tyres. Excuse me. Nobody touched it. I then went and scrapped it and got 250 quid for it. So it was a bit of an experiment. And three people that I know are still running around with no tax and test. And they've put their cars into a private trust, private family trust. And all they did is, and this is something I came up with, and I started doing it, and I showed them, and I've done it with nearly every car now, is, but I was lucky because I've got two friends who own a car pitch, and they sell me a car off their pitch. They fill their paperwork in, dog, but then there's an option for the new registered keeper, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, I don't fill that bit in, so I'm not volunteering to register the vehicle anymore. So in effect, and I did this from getting arrested 3 times, one of the coppers slipped up and said, your vehicle's coming back as unregistered, and whoa, it twigged. I realised they won't let you deregister, but there's a big difference between deregistered and unregistered, and that's what I've been helping people with. So by not consenting to fill that slip in, it becomes in effect now unregistered, not deregistered, but unregistered. They're waiting for me to voluntarily register it to them, which, as we know, we're giving them a title ownership of. So then what I did is created a piece of paper with the Freeman Family Trust. Okay, just handwrite it or type it out. And what I did then is I sent DVLA notification, and you don't even have to set a trust up. You don't have to explain it. It's a private trust. You don't even have to write a I just make this clear to everyone. You don't have to write the terms of a trust down unless it's to do with land and property. If it's not land and property, like your house or anything, if it's any other thing kept in trust, it can be a verbal trust between you. Now, no one's got a right. There's a big difference between what's public and what's private. No one's got a right to either deny or investigate that the Freeman Family Trust is a private trust, and the contents of that trust, one of the contents is that particular vehicle. So what I do is I record my details on my DVLA that such and such vehicle with registration mark blah, blah, blah is owned by the Freeman Family Trust. And then you're not registering, but you're recording. So just in case police purposes and DVLA, you know, if it's involved in some sort of crime, the police can come and see me. Mm-hmm. And what I do is for DVLA, and these three people are still running, by the way, on their cars, which I will be soon when I get another one. And what I say is, if you've got any questions, whatever day I'm sending it off, say it's 24th of January, I'll say the trust meet once a year. If you've got any questions, please write by 23rd of January 2000. So I'll leave it nearly a year So our next trust meeting is always a year after the day I send that letter, and they don't bother. So it's recorded to me, but it's not registered to them.
Very great. Do the DVLA acknowledge you're recording it in that way?
Good point. The lady got I've never had notification off DVLA that they've acknowledged my recorded, but the other three have. They already had the car. I bought mine off somebody else, but they had the car and wanted to, in effect, deregister it, but couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what they did is, let's say my mate Steve did it. So Steve owned a car. He wanted to keep it, but he wanted unregistering. So what he did is he set up the Smith Family Trust. Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve Smith sold the car to the Smith Family Trust, sent the paperwork off, and he got acknowledgement back that you are no longer Steve Smith. You are no longer Mr. Steve Smith. You are no longer the registered keeper of the vehicle. Yeah.
Yeah.
He set it up on a piece of just a blank piece of paper. Just scribbled it in. He then informed from Smith Family Trust to DVLA that the new owners, not keepers, the new owners of vehicle blah 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 is the Smith Family Trust. Any correspondence must be made to the duly appointed administrator of the trust, the one who runs it all, Steve Smith. Okay, he then got confirmation that the Smith Family Trust now own the vehicle outright. And again, he informed him that there will be a trust meeting in 364 days. So now all three of them have had confirmation. But the beauty of it is, Doctor, finish on this, is you can then go and insure it because you're the administrator of the trust just under your normal insurance. So that's how it works.
Right. So do you have to create a kind of bill of sale and a receipt or anything?
You could just write one out on a piece of paper, but nobody's ever been asked for one because it's a private matter. It's a private family trust.
Nobody can look at it anyway.
Nobody can look at it. Nobody's allowed to look. Oh, can I tell you this, Doc? Or is it? Am I rattling on too much?
No. It's good. It's good. Well, I think we're covering a bit of ground.
Okay, right. I help hundreds of people a month, loads and loads. And I'm the king of parking tickets. I got 155 in 3.5 years. I never paid one. But get this, you're going to love this. And these our listeners are going to love this. As it's evolved with parking tickets and stuff, some new information I've uncovered is you're going to love this. Okay, what I've started doing for people with parking tickets, because they've upped their ante, it's a little bit harder, and they changed the legislation either last year or year before, where they said, before, if you were the registered keeper of a vehicle, Doc, and you got a parking ticket, if you wrote off and said I wasn't driving, then before they couldn't do anything about it. But they changed the legislation either last year or year before, I think it was end of 2012. To say that if the registered keeper doesn't tell them who was driving, before you were under no obligation to tell them who was driving, you could just say, I wasn't driving, that's it, tough. So they changed legislation to say if the registered keeper doesn't divulge who was driving, then they will have to take the rap, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got four people off of this now. So what I've done is four people, two live in Manchester and two in Sheffield, near me. They've come in with these parking tickets, and they've only run over 4 or 5 minutes, and they've got this whacking great bill, and then they've not paid it, and it's doubled up. So I've said, right, the obligation is, so I've wrote my notice out, on the ticket you've got your time and date of the offence. Thank you very much for blah, blah, blah. I'm afraid I wasn't driving on the day, but I will tell you who was driving, and as long as you give them a name, address, and a postcode, Doc, then there's nothing they can do. Your obligation's done that you can't get done. So I've got me four mates, all separately, to write my address where I am now and my postcode where I live, and we've made a fictitious name up. And they've sent it off, and I'm expecting people to come and knock on my window. In fact, first one I did, I said, let's think of a joke name. And we decided that he was going to be called Isaac Hunt. Okay. I know. So my mate Rob, I wrote him a notice saying I wasn't driving, but if you kindly like to go and see Isaac Hunt at blah 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 address, this is his postcode. So I'm waiting for a bailiff to knock on my window, and as I open it, he's gonna say Isaac Hunt, and I'm gonna say, you definitely are, mate, and just shut window. But nobody's been since. And we've used different names. And I've had some lads who've used a real address down in London and one up in Scotland somewhere. As long as it's a real address and postcode, and put a fictitious name on it that they were driving. And what's happened is they're not even bothering to chase it up. Out of the four, no one's been near my house. And the other people, they can't be asked to chase it up. So I know it's, you can think, well, that's a bit wrong, but it's not. It's just playing them at their own game. So that's a good way. But I've got something even better to tell you here.
Go on then.
Am I rattling on too much, Dom?
No, carry on.
Okay, this is what I'm going to do with my next car, folks. You're going to love this. Okay, somebody sent me a freedom of information request. I don't know if everyone's aware, but you can send off for any corporation, you can send what's called a freedom of information request, FOI. You can do it by email, and they've got something like 2 weeks to tell you the truth. They've got to answer you back. So some genius, I think his name's Anderson or something, sent me this. And last year, he sent a freedom of information request. Sorry, I'm laughing because I know what's coming. You're going to love this. This is what I'm going to do next in 2 months when I buy a new car. This genius, A. Robertson was his name, he sent a freedom of information request to DVLA saying, can you please show me the law or prove to me whether a child, a minor, can be the registered keeper of a car? Yeah, that was his question. And that was his first question. And his second question was, and also, can you please show me the law that a dog or a cat can't be the registered keeper of a vehicle? Okay, and then he sent me the reply, and you're not going to believe it. The DVLA said, they replied first time, and they said, there is no law saying that the registered keeper of a car can't be a child. They said, but DVLA expect it to be somebody who's responsible for tax testing insurance. And they said, if you told us when you were registering that it was a child, we would refuse. But if you did register a child as the owner, there's nothing we can do about it. And then they stopped. So he wrote back, he sent another email, says, you've not answered question number two. And get this, though. Question number two is, there is no law absolutely that says that a dog or a cat or a budgie or anything can't be the registered keeper of a vehicle. Okay, so what I'm doing now is, when I buy mine in 2 months, that thing about the parking tickets, I'm switching it back round, dog. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to buy my car, and Mr. Softy, my cat, is going to be the registered keeper of the vehicle. Yeah. And then when I start getting parking tickets, remember the legislation is that Mr. Softy, the registered keeper of the vehicle, is under obligation. Obviously, he wasn't driving. He's got to tell him. Otherwise, he has to take the fine. And so, I know. So if anybody knocks on me when you're looking for Mr. Softy, I'm going to say, look, he goes out a lot at night. I don't see him that much. He does live here. And so it's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? I know. That's how my strange mind
works. What chance do they stand, eh? The more of that sort of stuff we're doing, that really will run rings around them.
I know. And every time they change it like they're doing, we're getting, this is what we're trying to say, we're getting that empowered and super advanced now that we can just switch it back using their own stupid rules and regulations.
That's exactly what I meant when I say that they're being forced to take actions to try and ameliorate what's happening to them, and they're just coming up with something and they can't begin to imagine what the results of those decisions are going to be. That is a brilliant one. Mr. Softy the cat. I love that.
If he says he's got a criminal record, I say, well, he's done a bit of littering, but that's about it. So, yeah, that's how crazy my brain works.
Have you ever checked up online to see what the status of these motors is with DVLA? Because they've got an online registry, haven't they, and you can go and see what they're saying about it on there. Have you ever had a look?
What's the status in what respect?
In terms of registered, unregistered, you know, See what DVLA have got to say on their website about the registration mark that you're doing these things with.
No, what, on a particular vehicle that I know of, are you saying?
Yeah.
No, yeah. Because what I've done is, I've not checked the number, but I know that when it's unregistered, they can't touch it. And as an experiment, well, we've got these three people driving around, and there was me as well, and they're not taxing or testing the vehicles. But I purposely parked my vehicle on that street to see what action would be taken. And I once got arrested for not giving me details. I did a talk, and I wouldn't give me details to these police officers, and they followed me on the motorway. And when I pulled into services, they basically jumped me and arrested me for 3 days. But my car, he slipped up, he says, your car's coming back as unregistered. It were in the services car park. And what happened was, it were there for about a week. They told me they'd taken it away and scrapped, impounded it and stuff. And we rung the service station and we said, look, my car's broken down. Will it be all right there for a few days? And she says, well, DVLA patrolled the car park and it's got a ticket. And I said, oh, I'm not bothered about that. And that was about the third day. But when I went up, the ticket had been taken back off again. So what I do know is that you can't deregister, but once it's unregistered, that's it. There's nothing they can do. They can only take action on a registered vehicle. And the trick is to trick you into consent, to thinking that you have to register it when you don't have to register it.
Very good. Very good. That I suppose, you know, that brings us on to a slightly broader point, because when I had my one and only run-in with the powers that presume themselves to be, one of the first things we did was make up a private family trust and basically put everything in it. If we know, don't we, that cars are quite hard things to keep out of their hands, and if they're letting you leave a machine on the side of the road that's not tax tested or sawn and it's got flat tyres and all of that, but it's unregistered, and they're not touching it, does that apply to other things like, you know, your laptops and your musical instruments and other things that you might not want them to get their hands on?
Yeah, well, when I was a little kid, I heard the expression that possession is 9/10 of the law, and I thought, I was about 10 years old, and I thought, why is it 9/10? Why isn't it 10/10? If you own it, it's yours. And that's what I mean, is that 1/10 so they can nick it back off you. That's why if you let bailiffs in, they take all your goods. If you put everything into a private family trust, it cannot be touched. They absolutely cannot touch it. They would be in breach of trust.
Brilliant. And is it necessary to label everything with the name of the trust?
No, you don't even have to write a trust down. As long as it's, unless it's land or property, it has to be written down then. If it's the stuff in your house or your vehicle, I'm just going to divert slightly because people are going to like this. I've got a friend who works for an insurance company, and he's looking at, you know, if you have your contents insurance in your house, he can't see any reason why your car can't be insured on your contents of your house. It's classed as a property. It's classed as a possession. It might take me a few months yet, but I'm looking at this. And what it is if you've got, for instance, a gold watch, and it's on your contents out of your house insurance, if you take it out and lose it, it's covered, isn't it? Well, there's no reason why your vehicle can't be the same. So I just thought I'd throw that in. So there's a possibility that we're going to be able to do it on your house insurance. What was that question again? I've forgotten.
I was just asking whether you had to label things. I mean, you know, would you have to have something saying, you know, outside your dwelling or wherever your stuff is, a thing saying, you know, the all contents are the property of so and so private trust.
Well, you wouldn't have to list it, but all you've got to do is, if anybody comes, have a pre-written notice. As long as you're notifying them, it's all about noticing each other because it's intent. If anybody does come and they're trying to get a grasp on your possessions, just pass them a piece of paper where it says everything inside whatever house it is number are the contents of a family trust, and everything in the surrounding areas, including vehicles, and anything in the surrounding areas, basically, belongs in a private family trust and cannot be touched. You haven't got to list each individual stuff. In fact, I've got a friend who, as soon as the bailiff were coming to his house, excuse me, and he passed him a document saying everything's in private family trust, he got straight on blow to his gaffer, and his gaffer said, leave him alone. And he just walked off. There's nothing they can do.
Well, that is absolutely brilliant, isn't it?
It is.
Surely that is a solution amongst solutions.
And don't forget, the onus is not on you to prove that it's in the trust and that the trust exists. The onus is on them to disprove it, which they can never do.
Because they're not allowed to look into it because it's private.
And if they were allowed to look into it, then we could look into, you know, all you really wealthy people like your Simon Cowells, they have things in trusts. That's how they protect their assets. Now, if they can look into ours, we would be able to look into theirs, and they don't want that. So they can't change it. Trust law is very difficult to change because that's what they're doing, to hide their stuff from us. So they would have to bring the curtain down on themselves. So it's and people that know me, Doc, I've always said, I mirror everything back. What they're doing to us, I just mirror it back. Do whatever they're doing, we'll do it back to them. They can't say it's not working, it's not right, because they're doing it themselves.
Very good. Well, that suggests to me that that your trust law stands somewhere above the legislative law. Is that correct assumption?
It is, yeah. In fact, trust law really goes back as far back as time, really. As far back as God or Creator, we come back full circle to this again. There is a trust with God or Creator that He's created a trust, and we are trustees or custodians of planet Earth, and so you can't get any higher than that. So really, trust law is really mirrors natural law or universal law. And so it is the highest form of law there is, with legislation being the lowest form of law there is, because it's by consent only.
So so just to swing that around, if you were being given the runaround by a public servant or somebody sitting behind a desk, and you were to ask them, say, I don't know, are you trusted to do your job? And they say, yeah. And you say, well, doesn't that make you a trustee? Are you not moving there, moving them into a different jurisdiction about which they should feel a bit nervous?
Absolutely brilliant, Doc. In fact, I've done this in court. Absolutely brilliant, mate. Okay, anybody who anybody who swears an oath, for instance, like a police officer or a judge or whatever, automatically are public servants, so they're public trustees. And so what I did is I went into court, and they were trying to give me a run around. And I basically said, this is a private trust meeting, which it is. That's what I mean about being a private meeting. And there were three magistrates. In fact, the clerk tried to speak up, and I said, silence, I'm not speaking to you. Didn't even know he could do it. And he went, zip. I said, I'm addressing the magistrates now. And as soon as I said that, he stopped. He didn't say another word, apart from contempt later on that he were panicking at. But then he shut up, and I said, I pointed to three magistrates, and I said, you, you've all swore oaths, have you not? And they went, yeah. So you swore oaths, so as such you are public servants, so therefore you are public trustees. And I said, I'm the general administrator of the trust who tells the trustees what to do. I said, you must dismiss all charges right now and discharge any alleged debts. And they just up and fucked off, basically. And as I was getting to the door, the clerk chap jumped up and went, we'll get you for contempt. That's the old. He was sliding down in his chair, so embarrassed, because I'd got onto trust thing, and then I quickly got rid of that contempt thing in 2 seconds. So
What did you do with it? I mean, I know they're not allowed to do you for contempt, are they, unless there's a jury, and then you can only be in, it's only the judge that can be in contempt, I'm led to believe. But how did you dismiss it?
Well, best thing to say to them is when they say, I know I've heard people say, is it civil contempt, and which is you need a contract, but the simplest way to do it is, I think I've got it somewhere, it's either Archibald or Blackstone, it's one of those. And what it is he was a top judge, you know, years ago, a lot of laws based on his findings. And what I said is, contempt is a common law misdemeanor, which it is. Contempt in any form is not a statutory offence, it's a common law misdemeanor, so it's not even a crime. And I just pointed to him and I said, as I stood at the door, I said, contempt is a common law misdemeanor. I said, when they shout contempt in court, Dog, all it is a claim and allegation. It don't mean nothing. They can't, even a judge, if he shouts, you're in contempt, it's just a claim. That's like me shouting, you've got a big nose. It means absolutely nothing. I have got a big nose. So I said, it's a common law misdemeanor. I said, if you want to do that, if you're claiming that, and now he can't judge on it then, those judges can't judge on their claim of contempt. So I said, it has to go to a common law court with a jury. I said, lovely, bring it on, and I'll tell all the jury all about these trust things. And he just shut his gob. So if anyone tries to get your contempt, it's a common law misdemeanor. And if it's common law and it's a misdemeanor, you're entitled to a jury, and it has to be a separate hearing and a proper case for contempt, which they're never going to do anyway, are they? So simple.
Very good. Very good. Another question for you is, have you had any dealings with the social services, or have you been able to help out anybody who is, because they seem to be ladling out a whole lot of grief? You got any ways of dealing with them?
Well, I've been doing stuff now for 6 or 7 years, and I've done loads of talks, loads of interviews and radio shows and lot, and apart from in brief, I've never ever spoken about social services. The only topic, in fact, Paul, who runs Critical Mass Radio, who runs it, he said to me the other day, you never do any talks on social services, do you? And I said, no, I've kept out of it. And the reason I've kept out of it to everybody is because if I'm going to court or I'm helping someone with a parking ticket, and if we make mistakes, we make mistakes and we learn from them. But because I am a single parent, I realised that I didn't want to help anybody in that respect, because if I make a mistake, it can be something catastrophic, and I don't want to. I want to know exactly what I'm doing if I'm going to help anybody. So what I've done is I've never done a talk about it or explained stuff. It's the only thing out of everything. I've absolutely covered every topic imaginable, but I've never talked about social services. And the reason is I've been quietly studying it in the background and learning, and we're getting very close. And what, this is a bit of a bold statement, but I'm ever aware of my own position and the things that I get up to and what social services are capable of. And what I've realised, and this is the last thing that's going to tip the final balance, this is, don't call your children children. If you have any dealings with social services, what they'll do is they'll come on a pretext of next to nothing, but once they get the foot in the door, like the bailiffs, then they're on top of you and all sorts of shit can happen. And poor families in everywhere in the world, but in Britain, are suffering. And I'm not going to talk too much about, I'm not going to give advice, but we're getting very close now. And what we've realised is, your children are not your children. Don't use the word child, because that's their terminology. Your children are, plain and simple, your property. Okay? And it's a horrible thing to say, but this is what we've got to do to beat these. And I don't want to swear, but this is the thing that really pulls at my heartstrings. These bastards are stealing children for private gain. So we must emphasise, no matter what, if they want to come in, or even if you've got a police officer, you tell them that it's your property. Okay? Don't mention the word child, whatever they say. Just say, it's my property, or they're my property. Okay, property rights are one of the strongest things you can have. Yeah? The only thing, get this, the only thing that social services can take away from a family is the birth certificate. That's their property. They cannot take the living, breathing child away if you know what you're doing. They can bluff it. They can kick your door in. You straight away tell them, inform them, demand, say, this is my property. My property does not leave me at all. Whether you've got six kids, one kids, and just watch the faces change. I know somebody was using it now to get the children back. And something that Carl Lentz said, which is really valid, he says, use the words require when you want a judge or a police officer or anybody, social services. Don't use the word, I want this, I want that. I require, okay? He's got somebody now who's, I know somebody now, and I've not really helped them because they're quite clued up. They're going into court now, in private court, private family court, and they are going to require, Doc, they're going to require the immediate restoration of property. Now, when they've put it through in an affidavit and signed it, we think they're going to get he thinks he's going to get his son back immediately. So they said, I didn't want to put this out yet, and it's the opposite to what we think, but you've got to see, don't use the word children or kids, it's your property. Remember what I said about when you're in your own house, Doc?
Yeah.
It's your jurisdiction, it's your property. Same as that trust thing. They can't take your property away because it's trust. Well, a family is a trust unit. Your children are they trust the mum and dad. So basically, you must say that it's your property, and you will not give up your property. And if you are trying to get your children back, have a look at the restoration of property, because the only real thing they can take is a birth certificate. So, does that even make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so that once again is the only thing they can lay claim on is the supposed corporation, and not on the flesh and blood entity, so long as you approach them correctly.
And you've got to stand fast and be confident and not be fearful. They work on fear. They work on absolute fear.
I've seen some shocking examples of the way offspring have been removed from their parents on the internet, and it is somewhere, and you know, these secret family courts that are being used and all that kind of stuff, really, there needs to be, that is one of the things that I've kept saying over these years, is until we've got some kind of solution to that, we really haven't got a solution to anything.
We haven't, and basically they say if you can't protect your own children, you don't deserve to have them, but they're the ones that are stealing them. And again, I'm coming back to this people's mandate again, it absolutely covers everything. The immediate restoration of property is going to be part of the mandate, Doc. Yeah. Anybody who's had any child taken away for whatever reason, however the time, it can be a day, if it's years, whatever, is you require the immediate restoration of property. Do the audit. Obviously, there's a monetary value for kids being taken away and put 40 grand for a foster parent, another 40 grand for adoption. It's big business. show your accounting, show it balances, you've got 60 days, show it balances, show it's equal, show it all tallies up, and the second part, remember what I said, show that you have not infringed on anybody's fundamental freedoms and rights in order to make that transaction. Again, it's all about property. Can you see how this people's mandate, the application it's got, Doc, it's absolutely covers everything.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah, that's a very exciting idea. Well, I've got one more question for you, and then we'll play some tunes to midnight or so. I think you've done a really, really great performance, but here's one for you. In the case of a couple, can you take each other into a trust and as such deregister both of you?
Ask me that one again. Say that again, Doc.
It says that...
I'm from Sheffield, so you have to talk slow.
Yeah, for a couple, can you take each other into a trust and as such deregister both of you? So using the car technique and the trust to try and deregister the man and the woman.
Interesting. Are you talking about a married couple, would that be? Or just
yeah, I think so. Yeah, in this case. Or, but I suppose, you know, we could think about it in either case, really. Because obviously we're deregistering men and women is another bit of a challenge, isn't it, really? I can see where his mind's working.
Well, I can see it, and it's really not a simple answer. And I'll tell you why it's not a simple answer, because Mr. Rob Freeman, the corporate name, is a trust, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, this is where they've got us, and that's a really... Who asked that question, Doc?
Ovaltine is the name of the individual who's come up with that one. Thanks,
Ovaltine. But that's a lot more deeper and really intelligent question than you can imagine. It's a great question, I'll tell you why. When I steamed into court and said about that trust, I'll try and make it quick because I know you're running out of time, you're wanting to close up. The trust is, Mr. Rob Freeman, that's the trust, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I got it wrong in court when I said you're public servants and I'm the administrator. I got it wrong. I didn't know I got it wrong. And the reason I got it wrong is, now, the reason they backed down is that they didn't want to acknowledge that there was a trust going off. They didn't want me to know that. That's why they backed down. Technically, I got it wrong, and I'll tell you why. Mr. Rob Freeman, okay, the Crown owned the name Freeman, okay? That belongs to them. They've set up a trust. The public servants are administrating that trust for the Crown, yeah? I'm the trustee, the shit end of the stick. The trustee always has to do what he's told. As regards the name, we're running around using that name on our bank statements and in court, and we're saying it's us. We're acting as trustees de Santor. The reason we get done in court is we're acting as bad trustees, because I don't own that name. It even says on your birth certificate it's Crown copyrighted. That's why we get done. Because the trustee, I'm in abuse of trust, because I don't know, and I'm claiming that Mr. Rob Freeman's me, aren't I?
Yeah.
Well, the trust of the name is owned by them, and we're the trustees, the shit end of the stick. But get this, not only is that the trust, the human body, the physical human body of Rob Freeman is also a trust. Now, this is where I am the beneficiary of the trust. This is where they're the trustees to protect me, because they swore oaths to do well by all manner of people. Okay, so the physical body is a trust itself. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's what they didn't want me to know in court when I said it's a trust and I'm the beneficiary. I got it wrong. I'm not a beneficiary of the name. I'm a beneficiary of the physical human being itself. So based on that, whether a couple, first of all, it couldn't be the corporate name, but I think to put in a trust denotes ownership of property. And to be honest, if you denote ownership of property of an adult human being, I think it would amount to some sort of slavery. So I don't think that would work. But for a child, you can call them property until they reach age of maturity. You know, in effect, you've got power of attorney over them.
Okay, so, and is that age of maturity 16 or 18?
It's a great question. I'm not sure. It's when you get your national insurance number.
That's 16 then, isn't it, I think?
Okay.
Well, yeah. that's when they gave me mine, anyway.
Yeah.
They might have changed, of course. They might be giving it to them at 4 now, for all I bloody know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all from trust, isn't it? Yeah. They set up a foreign citizen trust as a child. That's your birth certificate. Then when you get to 16 and you're eligible, it's what's called subrogate. It changes over into the Cester KV trust, which is evidenced by your national insurance number, and you, in effect, become a government employee then.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we don't have time to go into the Cester KV at this
point.
I know that's another very interesting subject, though. That's one I came across a while back, and that's another really mind-boggling bloody idea. But I think you've done us really proud, Rob. It's really been a pleasure talking to you, mate. It has.
And, thanks for having us on, Doc. I hope it's not come over as boring, because it's quite a detailed subject, and I've not got the greatest speaking voice. I've had drone on a bit, don't
you? I think, you know, in our household, you're deemed to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and possibly even before that.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on then, Doc. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. You're always welcome. I'll put on a couple of tunes for the people, and we'll have a quick chat whilst they're not listening.
Do you not want me to push off, or shall I push off now?
Oh no, I'll just have a quick chat with you just before you go, if that's all right.
Yeah, of course it is.
But
it is.
In the meantime, for people, I'll just remind them that they're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show with Dr. Rock and Rob Freeman on Sovereign Internet Radio.com, sovereigninternetradio.com, still getting used to that, and scotlandisfree.ning.com, and this is Johnny Cash and When the Man Comes Around.